Government Subcommittee of the Emergency Board. This is April 6, 2006, and the first item on the agenda is the Secretary of State Elections Business System Rewrite Project. Could we have the Secretary of State and anybody who you want to bring forward come forward? And thank you very much for coming here today. We appreciate you taking time to talk to us about your business systems rewrite project. So please proceed.
Thank you, Morgan, and members of the subcommittee. For the record, Phil Bradbury, Oregon Secretary of State. We're here for a very simple matter to request an additional federal fund limitation of $1.5 million to allow us to begin replacement of the election division computer system and, in fact, implement the campaign finance information tracking system that was required by last session's passage of House Bill 3458. Now, 3458 was funded with general fund dollars, $700,000, but there is preliminary and related work necessary to update the elections business system, that work is eligible for the federal Help America Vote Act dollars. So that's what we need the federal limitation for. Because all of the modules in the new elections business system are interrelated and dependent on each other to function, we need this federal limitation in order to meet the requirements of House Bill 3458, the electronic campaign finance filing. The new web-based elections business system will improve tracking of all elections information, from committee registrations to candidate filings to initiatives and election law complaints, and, of course, the issue of 3458 campaign finance. So that's what we need the limitation for. And I'd appreciate your support.
Thank you. Can we have Das weigh in on this?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. My name is Erica Kleiner from Das Budget and Management, and we recommend approval of the request.
Thank you. LFO?
Madam Chair, LFO would also recommend the increase of $1.5 million federal funds expenditure limitation.
And I notice also that the Information Management Technology Committee has gone over this issue and is also approving the request. Are there any comments or questions from the committee? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. Just really quickly, and this is more of a digression, but during the session, I chaired the subcommittee that worked through part of this issue. And the one caution I have is when we were approving the electronic filing system, I never meant for it to be that we had to go out and purchase our own software. Is there going to be a point in time where we're going to have a software system provided by the state to where each person will just go to a web page and input their data, or are we always going to have to maintain our own software?
Madam Chair, Patty McGuire, Deputy Secretary of State, it is our intent through the campaign finance, through the new campaign finance module that was funded during the last session, that there will be a web-based interface, something like a TurboTax mechanism that, particularly for small committees, will be easy to use. That will do all the things like aggregating contributions for you automatically. So if Representative Smith, if you were to receive a contribution from Patty McGuire, you'd type in Patty McGuire as well. You'd type in Patty McGuire and it would say, so is this the same Patty McGuire that wrote you a check last month? You'd say yes, and it would do the aggregating for you. So you don't need to do the system, would do all that stuff.
Well, the only concern I have, just as a quick follow-up, mm-hmm. The concern I have is right now people who are in office who are looking to run for office and to accept contributions have to go out and find someone who has the software, and I'm not sure that was the intent of the legislature. I really thought the intent was for you folks to develop the software system and for us then to have to file through you electronically. And so I just raised that point.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we are in an interim period. We are still using the old system, which is, I think, by any standards, clunky, I guess would be the technical term I'd use for that. It is our intent that with the new system in place, which we're required to have in place by next January 1st, that it'll be a whole lot smoother and a whole lot easier. And, you know, particularly, I mean, my big concern is that in looking at the design of this is to make it easy for small committees. I think, you know, big committees with lots of money are going to want to do this stuff in-house or hire somebody to take care of it. But, I think, I mean, it's very important to me personally and to the Secretary that we design something that encourages small groups to get together and be politically active, and we don't make the campaign finance reporting system too burdensome on them. And so we're in the design of this, we're working very hard to make it simple and easy for small committees to participate, because I really don't like finding small committees for being politically active, and so we want to make this easy.
Thank you.
Further questions or comments from the committee? I would take a motion to accept the LFO recommendation and move this to the full with a due pass recommendation.
Absolutely.
Have the motion. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Without objection, the motion is carried. Representative Boone, could I prevail upon you to carry this in the full committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'll call forward the Department of State Police for items 20 and 21. And Mr. Wilson. Good morning, Mr. Superintendent. It's nice to see you here again.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Nice to see you.
Please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. For the record, Ron Richter, Superintendent of the State Police. And with me at the table on your right, Monica Brown, our Budget Director. And on your left, Gina Gilbert. Thank you. We are here. The matter before us is the discussion of to request an appropriation from the emergency fund of $900,910 and to establish 10 full-time trooper positions. At the last January meeting, the E-Board allocated resources from the E-Fund to support evidence technicians program and established a reserve, as you know, for these 10 additional positions, provided that the department could come back and report on our progress on the following items, that we would hire or substantially complete the hiring process for the 10 evidence tech positions, that we would identify a sufficient number of eligible recruits to fill at least 20 existing vacant sworn positions and fill any additional trooper positions, that we could fill any positions that you would authorize. We would schedule a recruit school to begin on or about May 1st, and that we would use the newly allocated resources for the evidence tech program and for the trooper, the purposes for which they were designated. Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, we are happy to report that we have the number of applicants. We have 29 conditional offers of employment already in place, or people already identified. We have a few more interviews to go. So the requirement to be able to fill at least 20 existing trooper positions, we're well over that. The remaining 10 would mean we would have to have 30 recruits in our recruit class starting May 1, and we are confident we are going to be there. We have another interview yet today, a person coming in, which could be the 30th one. We've got another 8 or so in the pipeline that we think will give us the ability, hopefully, to add 1 or 2 or 3 to that. But our commitment or the requirement before the subcommittee was that we would come back here and let you know we in fact could hire at least 30 recruits May 1st, and we are confident that we can. So that's one of those matters. On the other evidence tech positions, another one of the requirements that we either have them hired or be substantially through the hiring process. There were actually 9 full-time positions that were authorized. One of the positions we are determining is going to be split into 2 half-time positions. It will still be the same total number of positions. But of those positions, only two are pending completion of the background. The remaining positions, we've already got the people hired with start dates of April 3rd, April 10th, and May 1st. So we're well on our way, very well on our way, to having that, all of that work completed very shortly. Let's see. With the recruit school, it is scheduled to begin at Camp Rylea in, I think it's the 1st of May, May 1st. And, of course, we've committed previously and renew our commitment that the resources that we're asking for to be allocated for these 10 positions will, in fact, be used for exactly what they were appropriated for. We also are directed to report to the e-board at each meeting during 2006 on our financial status and the number of vacant and double-filled positions that we have. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have along those lines, rather than just give you a bunch of information up front. But it'd just be your pleasure, Madam Chair and members, how you want me to proceed on that.
I know what I'd like to do here is get all the information out on the table from BAM and from LFO, and then have a discussion once we've got all that information out. So could we proceed then with Ms. Gilbert and what BAM's analysis of the situation is?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the subcommittee, for the record, Linda Gilbert, BAM's Budget and Management. We are recommending that the request be approved as requested, but contingent on the receipt of an updated financial status report by the Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management, and Legislative Fiscal Office. And that report isn't quite finished yet. When it is finished, we would expect to review it. And then, until then, we would ask that you request BAS unschedule the funding until we have an opportunity to review.
Okay. Mr. Wilson.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, our recommendation is the same as DAS's in this case. And I do know the department, and chiefly Ms. Browner is working hard on getting that financial report done. And I think when we talked a few days ago, it was looking a week or two out that would be complete, and that should be sufficient time to review that prior to the recruit school being put in place.
So complete meaning that the department itself will have been finished with it, and it'll be ready to go over to DAS and
right.
Come over here to LFO.
And my expectation, Madam Chair, would be that Ms. Gilbert of DAS and myself will take a look at that and make sure that, you know, that we feel comfortable with it and relay that issue back to the superintendent and his staff.
Okay. One of the things that we talked about when we were all together in the last e-board meeting was developing some kind of a display that would make it easy for us to see where the vacant positions were, both on the sworn side and the professional side, and then be able to chart the agency's progress as we go through that. And I'm very glad you have that. So could you take us through this and tell us what this is all about?
Madam Chair, this has been expanded a little bit from the one you saw in the past a couple months ago at the last e-board meeting. At that time, we only had sworn officers. In this one, we have added, under the column professional, that would be all the non-sworn staff. And if I'll just quickly go through patrol here, and it is a two-sided piece of paper. We expanded it to include some other divisions, so it reflects the entire department. The first grouping there is vacant positions. In patrol, you're showing, for example, under professional, four vacant positions as of earlier this week. And, in fact, I believe those four positions are the four remaining evidence techs, which they will be hiring over the next month. That hiring will be completed. I think all the offers are out there and accepted.
So, but I believe what we were told was that the one remaining evidence tech came on May 1st, and that the other ones came on at the beginning of this month?
There are, what's happening here, these reflect the actual vacant positions as of April 30th. Some of those evidence techs were already hired, and some of them weren't there, where they were 10 positions total there. So that would have been six would have been hired or close to being hired on April 3rd, and four remaining are out there. But the four, I believe, okay, go ahead, Monica, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, for the record, Monica Brown, Budget Director with OSP. Doug is partially correct. Two of those professional positions are the remaining evidence techs that are in background, as the superintendent mentioned. The other two are administrative support positions in patrol.
Okay.
I apologize.
But those are also in recruitment, and we expect to fill those.
Okay. So take us over to, how do you want to go through
this? I was just going to go through the patrol division.
By departments.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Then the vacant but funding used for overtime, a negative four troopers. These are four positions. They're other funded positions, and they're not filling those positions but using overtime. So you're getting the equivalent coverage. These are other fund revenues that come from the Department of Transportation. I think it's for truck safety issues. So then you get a net vacant positions that are funded there in that third line. There are a number of double-filled positions in the patrol division.
Okay. So I understand this.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chairman. So on those four positions, the money that's other funds coming over from the Department of Transportation, that's going to be used to pay for overtime, not for new positions or existing positions.
That is right. There are four positions that have funding, but they're not using those to fill those positions. They're using that with existing to go over, let's say, 40 hours a week, and someone may be working 45 hours a week, and that's the overtime for that particular function of truck safety.
The one thing I would point out for this committee is in the during the Ways and Means process, this issue was raised before that subcommittee, and the way it was presented to us was that these were actual positions, not the funding of overtime, and so at some point we may need clarification on that.
And I would very much urge the committee members to ask questions, because I think that this display is really going to be what helps us all to understand the staffing levels inside of the agency. So using this as a tool and understanding the tool, I think, is an important thing for us to do.
The double filled I mentioned, what you'll see here are a number of double filled positions, eight of them that are funded in vacancies in other divisions, and I believe it's the intention of the department when this recruit school starts up that those vacant or those double filled positions will be solved, given that as people move from patrol division to other divisions as the recruits come online. Under pending actions, this is something new too. And they're pretty self-explanatory in some cases. Retirements just shows that these are the retirements in the next few months that the agency knows about at this time. I'm sure that number will increase or decrease depending as they fill positions or more troopers or more staff retire. The next item, a proposed reclass. The department has a reclass package in right now to eliminate two sergeants and use those resources to take care of some reclass problems across the agency, including creation and funding of the second deputy superintendent position, which is currently double-filled at this time. And then there are recruiting the four positions that sort of goes along with the vacant positions at the top of that column. And then that gives you total pending actions there of negative four. And then when you factor things out for a net figure, you come up there on the bottom line of what sort of happens when taking all those things into account. And if you go through the rest of the divisions on this and the back, you have the same type of pattern. Just as a note, because I know it's the interest of some people in the Fish and Wildlife Division, there are a number of vacant positions, but those will almost all be, as I understand it, filled with the new recruit school. Keep in mind, this changes. This is different than the information I had when I wrote the report or our analysis up, which I believe was based on the March 24th numbers. These change almost daily.
Well, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask Ms. Brown. In the classification here under pending actions, what kind of time frame did you put? Were you working with when you were tallying these things?
Madam Chair, the time frame we were looking at, we ran the report again the first part of April, and then essentially went around and talked to the divisions to find out what they knew about, what retirements people were talking about, what letters were coming in, what known transfers they were anticipating, like within the next month to 2 months, that they knew were fairly confident of.
Okay. So we're looking at about a 60-day horizon in time here, and then it gets too foggy to predict.
But it's far from absolute. I mean, it's just known and best estimate at the time.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. Let's go back to the deputy superintendent position. Help me understand why we should take two positions out of our patrol division off the road to fund a deputy superintendent.
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, Representative Smith, we have the same number of people in the administrative front office staff of the department as we've had for a lot of years, and we've had different configurations of, you know, two majors, a deputy superintendent, myself, four majors, you know, a deputy superintendent, myself. We have currently, myself, two lieutenant colonels, no deputy superintendent, but that's the official position classification is deputy superintendent, but they're operating under the rank of lieutenant colonel, which we've had or not had over the years. We have, so there's myself, those two lieutenant colonels, and two majors, for a total of five people at the rank of major or above. That is consistent with the long, many years in the department. More or less, and it is the arrangement that I feel that we really need to run the organization properly. Even as it is, there is work. People's desks are stacked high with work. I don't have people sitting around, you know, looking for something to do. This is the configuration that we think is working. I've been there in headquarters for 11 years. Seen it work under different configurations and in concert with others, including DAS and the governor's office. A couple years ago, we decided to try this model, and it really is working. It's working better than I thought it was going to work.
I just want to make sure that I'm aware of the opportunity cost, and so I support what you're saying, and you know what you're doing. I support that. I just want to make sure we're all aware of the opportunity cost is two sergeants.
Well, it's actually a little more. It's more than one sergeant position that would take it, and we're also, as Mr. Wilson commented, we're addressing some other reclass packages, because it doesn't take two whole positions to do what we're trying to do. My commitment has been to try to eliminate these double fills everywhere in the organization, and we're working hard to do that. We have vacancies that we can't fill in the sergeant ranks. We're not able to recruit and get people to put in for these jobs. So rather than have them sitting there vacant, and while I've got a double fill going on in some other part of the organization, we feel this is the best way to deal with the double fill issue currently, to permanently finance it and eliminate it. And if in the future I have an opportunity to add sergeant positions back, I'll be happy to do that. It's just that right now they're sitting there, as you can see on this chart, with eight vacant sergeant positions in patrol. And we've recruited for them. They're not all the same type of job, but essentially we feel this is a way to resolve this double fill issue. We'll have no negative impact on the road, because I can't fill the positions currently anyway.
Thank you.
Why do you have so many vacancies in the sergeant part of the thing? Why isn't that an attractive place for troopers to move into?
When a person gets promoted to sergeant, they lose their overtime. Sergeant is a management position, unrepresented. The wage and benefit situation for the represented people is such that people will, for all practical purposes, take a pay cut to get promoted. So there are people who are willing to do that, but there is not really much of a, and it varies from person to person where they are on what part of the salary range when they get promoted. But we have a problem with wage compression. It's been a long-standing issue. We look forward to trying to work to resolve that, you know, in the next session. But we intend to bring something forward to try to deal with that. But that is probably the biggest part of the problem, Madam Chair. And there are other dynamics that weigh in on that. Is you know, maybe where the position is, there's someone just doesn't want to pick up their family and move to go to that place. Spouses have jobs. It's not just a wage compression issue, but I think that chiefly is the big problem. We've got a lot of even the people that are currently in the sergeant's positions and above, there is a recruitment and retention problem going on in the management ranks of the organization because we just don't have the compensation plan to really provide them with that the proper amount of incentive, I should say. We've had, I don't know how many sergeants demote in the last year or two because of that.
The point that I would raise in relation to this is that we have heard from the agency that there is a clear and overriding need for troopers out on the road, and I think that you've gotten us that message loud and clear.
Yes.
We've also heard the same thing from the people of the state of Oregon, that they want more troopers on the road to deal with traffic issues and public safety issues. And I think that we need to be mindful that that's the goal of the exercise that we're undertaking here, to put troopers back on the road. And I recognize that you have issues in the management side of the agency, but I do think that we need to continue keeping troopers in patrol functions and look to the next session as the place to deal with the issues that you're having in your management infrastructure.
Yes.
I think we need to be really mindful of the task that is at hand here and stick with it. Senator Carter.
Just want to follow up on Representative Smith's question, Superintendent. When you're doing external work for the organization, who is operations person for the internal work?
When I'm away?
Yes.
One of the lieutenant colonels, well, the way we have it arranged now is that one of the three of us will always be in the state and on call or on the job at all times.
So they are working outside of their categorical status of work in terms of operations. Do lieutenant colonels do operational work?
One does. One of them is assigned more on the administrative and policy side of the organization, and the other is in charge of the operational side of the organization.
If I were to ask you to, If I were to ask you to draw a schematic of your organization, what would it look like? Here you are.
Yes. The way we're doing it, well, the superintendent's office has three people in it. In that top box, there's three people, myself and those two lieutenant colonels. And then you go down and you draw a line to either side, and there's a major on either side of that, and you go down the organizational chart from there.
But if a major is absent in terms of hiring practices, who does it?
Probably the lieutenant colonel or the other major.
The point that I'm trying to make is that no matter how many troopers we get on the road, you still have administrative responsibilities. And if you have external work to do, then who do you leave in charge? And you still have a gap in terms of protocol as it relates to whether you have a deputy. I don't know what it is. I'm just saying whether you have a deputy or whether you have a lieutenant colonel, whether you have a major. Somebody is working outside of their classification. So, and I think that's what the chair is, what I think I hear you saying, that the management piece of this obviously needs some work on it, but where you would like things to be right now is to take care of the trooper issue and come back to the legislature to take care of the management side. Is that what I hear you saying?
I think you are really capturing what I'm trying to say, that it seems to me to be counterproductive to be taking troopers off the road to beef up the management function when clearly the need that the agency has expressed clearly is to put troopers on the road.
Yes, ma'am, and we are going to fill every trooper position that we have. That's our goal. I'm not taking troopers off the road to put them in the front office.
Right, but I'm hearing that both of you guys are having the same kind of concern, but I'm saying as a former president CEO of an organization that there is no way that you can have people not feel demoralized if you have them always working outside of their classification And you're not going to get sergeants. Why should they leave the rank of a patrol person and come in and be a sergeant and work between being a sergeant status and being a deputy administrator? I mean, somewhere along the line is something that we have to take a good look at Doug, and try to bring into balance. You're going to always have trooper problems running from a trooper who is in a classification where he has union protection and da-da-da-da, he or she has. And then to go to a sergeant position where you have nobody to protect their interests, I don't blame him. I wouldn't go there either. Plus, you don't have any incentives for them to be there. So somewhere along the line, it has to come back to the legislature so that we could make sure that the administrative responsibilities are in place and you're not having so many people work outside of classification. Somewhere along the line, so we have to have resolution, folks.
There's
no doubt about that.
I agree, and the resolution needs not to be at the expense of the patrol troopers. Okay. Representative Smith.
Two definitional questions. I don't understand the term vacant but no funding. To me, that almost means wish list.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that might be where there is insufficient revenue in a fee stream to fund a position. It won't be a general funded issue. It will be an other funded issue. So
if we don't have a person, walk me through this because I'm having trouble.
So let's say you
have
a
position and you have no money.
Well, the position exists, but it's vacant, first of all. The position is there, but it's vacant. And let's say it's a fee, it's a program to do criminal records checks, for example, which they do have. And the revenue stream for that program off the fees is insufficient to fund all the positions. So they are keeping a position vacant because there is insufficient funding in that revenue stream.
So did the legislature then overproject the positions?
In some cases, it very well might have.
I understand that. One last quick question.
Please go ahead.
This is for DAS. How do we proceed but be contingent? If we proceed with hiring and the report doesn't come back satisfactory, what do we do in terms of the hiring?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we will, first we expect that on the 19th we will receive a financial report that is complete and that is right. And you're asking if it's incomplete, if so Mr. Wilson and I think that it's...
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be technical here, but the term you used for us to understand was we're going to proceed contingent upon. And what I don't understand is how do you proceed in moving forward with hiring contingent upon something? Because once you proceed in the hiring process, it's awfully difficult to stop it if the report comes back insufficient.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, in fact, they have proceeded in the hiring process, and that was part of the contingency and part of the report is that they are recruiting now and hiring for patrol troopers, and this will continue, as I understand it. Meanwhile, to make sure that they have met all of the conditions of retrieving the reserved $900,000, we want to unschedule it until we meet or until they have met the final condition.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, if I may add, all the offers of employment we have made have been conditional to this point, and they will continue to remain conditional until the people show up for work, which their first day of work in the OSP is the day they report to the Recruit Academy. Between April 19th and May 1st, if that report isn't satisfactory, there's a reason to believe we're not fiscally sound enough to hire those people. We'll tell them not to show up. They won't get hired and then unhired.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, just to add to that, if I was the superintendent, I'm sure he feels this way, if I suddenly see an unexpected hole in my budget that I don't have the funding for the existing staff or existing costs, I'm going to want to either reduce that recruit school to stay within my budget or whatever, too. I don't want to overexpend.
Yes.
The looking at the vacant positions in the criminal division, there are 8 positions in the trooper column there, And I recall that when we came together last time, I think that there were 12 vacant positions in that category, but I don't remember exactly. But I do recall a conversation that when the new recruits from the 19 class that graduated back in January were put in trooper positions, that you would advertise these vacancies to the existing trooper staff. And why didn't they fill? What's going on here?
Madam Chair, I believe you see a netting effect going on in the criminal division. They did transfer in, I want to say, 5 to 6 people out of patrol and I think one out of Fish and Wildlife. I'd have to verify those numbers. So several people did transfer in. They've subsequently had several retirements out of that division as well. So this is the net effect of where they are today. So they did do the recruitment. They did make several transfers. Weren't successful in all cases.
So what is the strategy then to deal with this, these vacancies and any that are, I mean, you show that one is going to, you've got one being recruited, one is set to retire. So short term, it doesn't, you know, it looks like you're just maintaining the vacancy rate here.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, we, as has been mentioned a couple of times, there's always movement. Almost on a, certainly monthly and weekly, there is movement back and forth between the divisions. We're constantly recruiting for positions that we need to fill in interagency drugs teams, in a patrol office, in a fish and wildlife assignment, and so forth. I think, and I'm going to have to verify this, but we may have some more pending movement between the divisions, pending not just the hiring of the or the graduation of the last recruit class going to the field, but the completion of their field training with their training officer, because we can't put them out on the road until they're done with that. So I think there's more of this movement in the works. We will continue to make every effort to fill every to get all the division staffing aligned the way that it's intended to be, so that there is exactly the right number of people in patrol and criminal and fish and wildlife. It is a challenge. I'm not sure we'll ever hit it right on the number, but we will keep working at it and keep advertising these positions. At the end of the day, we could get there very easily if we wanted to just grab somebody and say, you're going over to this town, take your family and move, and this is your new job. We don't like to do business that way. We're trying to make it work for the employees and the mission of the department, and so it's sometimes a little tricky. But we're making our very best effort to. It's certainly not at the administrative end of this that we're dragging our feet some way. We are actively recruiting for every one of these jobs, trying to get the balance of the divisions where it's supposed to be.
The Fish and Wildlife Division is also concerning to me. This,
yes.
I think, is this more people than, or more positions than were vacant the last time?
Madam Chair, yeah, it is. It's three more vacant positions, but I think a lot of that came out through retirements.
We, if I may also, we have a number of these recruits that are starting May 1 that are going to go into these fish and wildlife positions. And the word I got as of a week ago, and I apologize, it may have changed this morning, but the last word I got is we were going to be full in fish and wildlife when we get this recruit class hired. So, again, we're making our very best effort to fill it up. We understand the direction of the legislature. We want it to be filled. The Fish and Wildlife Department of Fish and Wildlife wants them filled. We'll do it.
Okay, and then in the forensics department, the 5 professional vacancies that you have, does that relate to the evidence tech program?
Madam Chair, no, the evidence techs are in patrol.
Okay. So Monica, what are the 5?
Madam Chair,
what's the shape of that?
Pardon?
The professional vacancies in the forensics division.
Madam Chair, there are 2 forensic scientists. There's a lab specialist, a lab tech, and a latent print examiner that are vacant, and they're actively recruiting for all of those. I believe they've estimated that sometime this month that they would be able to get those filled, but they're actively recruiting in those technical positions.
Madam Chair, I need to remind the subcommittee a couple things. On the criminal division, you mentioned the 7 vacant positions there. There were 14 back in January when we did the same thing. So they've made a significant amount of progress, and plus they've had retirements in that And keep in mind, this is a point in time. You're going to see, like in the forensics division, normal turnover. People leave a job or whatever, and there are a little over 100 people in the forensics division. I can't think of the number right now, but this would, you know, represents 5% or less of the staff, and there's normal turnover, and it's going to show up in a, this isn't a list of long-term vacancies. This is the vacant positions at a point in time. So you'll see the turnover happening here too.
I recognize that, and I think that what concerns me is that the things that are causing the vacancies are things that the agency knows about ahead of time. It's not like people just disappear. And so I would be very concerned that there is a process in place within the agencies to be dealing with these ahead of the time that they're actually vacant, that they know several months ahead, even more than that, that people are retiring, or if people want to transfer, that's known ahead, and that be a part of the recruiting program, that these things be recruited for as soon as it becomes apparent that there's going to be a vacancy there.
Yes, ma'am. We are. I think there are a couple of classifications in the organization, maybe more than a couple, where we are basically constantly recruiting because there's never a time in which we think we can stop. For example, in our telecommunicators in the dispatch centers, there's a turnover there. It's just always ongoing. And so at any given point in time, you're going to see vacancies. Yes, we knew they were coming, and we're recruiting as fast as we can, but it's just the way it is. Forensic scientists is another category. There are so many of them. We have virtually no sworn people or a very small handful anymore in the lab system, so they're all professional staff for the most part, and eventually they will all be professional staff. We're constantly recruiting for forensic scientists in various categories. And the other thing I need to point out from a budgetary standpoint, budget execution standpoint, if I retired today and Monica was the superintendent tomorrow, and there's no gap in between. When an employee retires, we have to, of course, pay out their vacation and comp leave, and there's a cost there. And we go backwards if we don't let that vacancy sit there for a couple of months. If we rehire the next person the day after the prior incumbent retires, we've got a big lump sum payment that's not in the budget that will cause us to go out of balance. So it's pretty common. Where we can, we will deliberately leave a position vacant for a month or two to recover those expenditures. So it's another dynamic. But on these positions where we have all this turnover, you can't worry about that. We're constantly recruiting in certain categories.
Madam Chair, I'd also add on to that, in addition to the compensation payouts that are there, when developing the budget from the technical aspect, the process assumes a certain amount of turnover, and so there's a vacancy savings calculation that is netted off of the personal services. For this biennium, in the general fund, that's just under $1 million for this agency. So at some point, you have to accumulate at least $1 million in savings just to break even. So that's just one more dynamic that goes into that.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. I was just teasing. I think you do a great job. I admire your leadership. You do a very good job for us. Monica or Doug, one of the things I think that would help us give a fairer representation is if the next time we meet, if we could see the total number of positions in each of these. So that way we can determine the ratio that we're looking at. So that way it presents a fair picture.
What I'd also like to do, too, while we're on the topic of this, because I think this is a pretty powerful tool to kind of get a picture of what's going on, is if it's possible somehow to figure out a way to incorporate the historic data in it so that we've got little snapshots of where it was in last E-Board, where it was this E-Board, and we've got some point of comparison for the vacancies.
This thing's going to be this big.
That's what I was going to say.
Well, the big chart.
Figure it out.
That's a good idea.
I just have a couple of comments to make, and incumbent on my very unprofessional and anecdotal only information that I get in the field or by phone or by chance. That being said, this isn't just like in my opinion, from what I see, it isn't just like putting a want ad out and then hiring and the person start, you know, how soon can you start position. So there's a lot of stuff we need to think about here, including morale in the ranks and how things have been going and the constant sense of being underfunded and the uncertainty of what the funding might be, not to mention the fact that, and I don't have numbers, so don't ask them, if you are looking at an Oregon State Trooper's pay now today compared with Portland City Cops, some sheriff's agencies, and I actually just heard this last week of a young man going into the service and was asked, why don't you be a trooper? You know, think of that, top cop. He says, I'd love to, but I'm thinking of the bottom line. And he's saying that he can make more money going with Portland's police, and so that's what he's doing. I've also heard in our case, I'll take my own agency in a close town in my district, Seaside, why don't you guys go to the troopers? Why don't you become a trooper? I would, but then I'd have to go through all that training again. If there was sort of a tier that we could pass through and go through the additional training we haven't had and then become a trooper rather than devote 5 months, you know, and 'cause I want to get out there and do it. So there's that. And just there's a lot of things to think about. And finally, I just want to say that all that being said, and these guys, at least in my area, I can speak for them, come to the aid of their brother and sister agencies with no discrepancy or whatever the word is. And I've got the flu, and my memory's a little shot today. But, just as anecdotal, I had a case. Our fire department responded to the call. It was a log truck versus Volvo on Highway 26. So we know everybody's going fast. When we got there, three people in the fire department responded. We're looking for the Volvo. We see the log truck rolled over, totally mashed, and nobody sees the other car. The driver's inside. You need the Jaws to get him out. Three people. I mean, you need two people just to do the Jaws. We then have two troopers on scene, and they climb right up into it, you know, the pressed uniform beside the scene. These guys were awesome. They took charge. They did it. ODOT, OSP are there doing these jobs. We just really need to be behind them and put that piece out there in front of us when we're looking at funding additional troop positions, because it was just a fluke that we had two troopers in two separate cars within the same area at that time. So I just want to put that in. Thank you.
Senator Carter.
Thank you. So, Fred, how much does it cost you to set up a recruit school?
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, we have the facility on permanent lease, so the startup costs are nominal. We have a catering contract with a food service vendor down there that we pay, you know, as we go. And then our staff, existing staff, people from around the state come to function as instructors and camp staff for the recruit class. So we essentially, out of the agency, just absorbs or redirects the workforce necessary to go down and put on the school in terms of the training. But the food service contract is, of course, only there when we have recruits going on. What other costs are there? I guess we have to uniform and outfit people, but these things are budgeted in the cost of a trooper to, I forget the dollar, but something like $5,000 a person to get them through the recruit academy.
And how often do you have the training set up? How many times in the course of a year?
About two times a year. We had a class. We're starting May 1. The last class graduated in January and started, I think, last September. So, you know, it's not necessarily twice a year, but it could be as often as twice a year. And this we may or may not do another recruit class later this biennium. We're hoping to in December.
And there also is, I understand, a plan to move the state police training into DPSST and realize some efficiencies there, too.
we do intend to merge 16 weeks, the common 16 weeks of the training with DPSST at the new facility in Salem, and then do the balance of the OSP training before and or after that.
The committee members, we're moving along like a herd of turtles here, so we need to kind of pick up the pace. But I do also appreciate the work that's been done inside your department on the big fiscal picture, which we're eagerly awaiting, and I'm glad to hear that the arrival of that is imminent. And members, if there are no more questions or comments, I would be willing to accept a motion to move the LFO recommendation to hold. We have the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion carries. Representative Smith, would you carry this in the full committee?
I'd be honored to. Thank you.
And let's go ahead then and move on to item 21, which is a report on staffing.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, for the record, Ron Ricker, Superintendent of the State Police. To your left is our BAM analyst, Linda Gilbert, and to your right is Captain Craig Durbin, Director of our Gaming Enforcement Division. The Department of State Police was directed through a budget note to report to the first E-Board after March 1, 2006 on an evaluation of the level and type of staffing utilized to enforce laws relating to gaming activities and the provisions of the intergovernmental compacts with tribal governments. Madam Chair, members of the committee, essentially the core piece of this work was to ask us to review the type of employees that we have engaged in doing work both in, most significantly, with tribal governments. Specifically, there was a feeling that we could have a professional staff, non-sworn police officers, people that were not police officers, doing some of the regulatory work as it relates to tribal gaming. That is a topic that had come up a number of times over the years. In each case, we felt it was best, the state felt it was best to continue with the status quo, which was these were all officers doing this work. Following the adjournment of the legislature, we undertook another review of this issue. Captain Durbin did this. There was also, I'll let him speak to it and talk about the detail of it, but in essence, we are here today to report that we believe that we, in fact, can and should convert some of these positions to non-law enforcement regulatory type employees. I understand that the tribes are pleased with that outcome. I'm going to ask the captain to speak to it in more detail, and then thereafter we'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, my name is Craig Durbin. I am a captain with the Oregon State Police and currently the director of the Gaming Division. Under the Gaming Division, we do have the Tribal Gaming Section, and as the superintendent mentioned, we were instructed to look at the type of staffing that we're utilizing in the Tribal Gaming Section and the size of staffing, and to assure that that was needed to assure compliance with the tribal state compacts that we currently have in place. These compacts are signed by the governor's office, are signed by the 9 Native American tribes in Oregon, and what they require is that the Department of State Police provide specialized independent gaming oversight to assure compliance with both the compacts and controls that we have over the gaming industry. During this evaluation, the primary concern in front of the department and the governor's office was how to assure this independent oversight that protects what we call the core values of the FISH, the fairness, integrity, security, and honesty of the games, while showing deference to the tribes' concerns. To address this, we did look at the past communications that the tribes had provided the Tribal Gaming Section and the legislature. We also looked at our historical data, and then we spoke in accordance with the budget note with the 9 tribes in Oregon. And we asked for representatives from those tribes to speak with us about this. Many of the tribes referred to the 2004 proposal that was given to the legislature by the Oregon Association of Indian Gaming. And in that, they spoke to that they believe that we could reclassify sworn positions to non-sworn positions in the area of the monitoring that we do in the casinos. They believe that this could be done through attrition, and they were in agreement to that as well. We then looked at the historical data, and then we spoke with the tribes. As we were speaking with the tribes and they referred to this document, many of them said that, in fact, that was their primary concern, and that there was one tribe that stated as far as that they felt that there could be a reduced size of the tribal gaming section, but was not sure of how that could be accomplished or what that should look like. And many of the tribes, in fact, stated that they felt that the section itself needed to determine what they needed as far as a staffing level to assure the compliance of the tribal state gaming compacts. What we did in this evaluation then was looked at all the data, and our primary concern is stated that we wanted to make sure that that fish was protected, and that if we did go to a non-sworn reclassification of our monitoring detectives, that we'd still be able to do those functions. We then took and separated out, as in 2004, when we did the look at this, we took the position description as it was for a sworn, and we looked at what the classification would be at that time. The classification at that time came back as an internal auditor too, and at that time, the salary range for that internal auditor too was actually higher than the classification for a trooper. In this evaluation, based on all the data, the communication with the tribes, we felt that we would take and possibly do a restructuring of the tribal gaming section and separate out the position description and basically remove the pieces that were required for a sworn officer as far as the criminal activities within a casino, looking at crimes that would possibly happen with a casino and the things that a law enforcement officer would do, as opposed to what their auditing functions to assure with the compliance provisions. So we did separate out those. We then had that looked at that level came back as an auditor one position. We then looked at the monitoring that we were required to do, and in that we felt at this time, in the governor's office as well, that it would not be prudent for us to downsize the tribal gaming section, that we felt the duties that we needed to do to ensure compliance with the tribal state compacts required the current staffing level that we have, but we could in fact reclassify the five sworn positions that we have doing the monitoring to non-sworn status and still assure the fish. So what we propose to do is that we are currently looking at reclassifying five FTE from sworn to non-sworn. We then would have 1.5 FTE doing criminal investigations, and we would have 2.5 FTE doing our vendor background investigations. We feel that this should be accomplished through attrition, and the tribes are in agreement with this. And the reasons for that is that not only will this be a significant change to the whole structure within the tribal gaming section, which we want to make sure that as we do this change that we have all the internal controls in place to assure the fish, but at the same time we're looking at right now with the tribes of possibly restructuring the billing system. And in restructuring that billing system, that could cause changes within the amount of criminal investigations that we currently do within the tribal casinos. It may or may not, but currently the criminal investigations that we're doing encompass about 6.5% of the total overall time within the casinos. If the billing system changes, if that goes up, then we could need more additional sworn personnel instead of the 1.5 and FTE, which means that the five that we're reclassifying to non-sworn might have to be slowed down to where we only have four reclassified. So we think that the attrition model is the best model. This model was built on looking at this through attrition, and again, the tribes and the governor's office are in agreement with that as well.
Gilbert. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. Again, Linda Gilbert, DAS Budget and Management. We recommend that the committee acknowledge receipt of the report. Mr. Rooks?
Madam Chair, we agree with DAS of the recommendation to acknowledge receipt of the report. Our only concern depending on the length of the transition period, and it would seem to us that, depending on how long some of these sworn officers are to years till their retirement, that it could drag out a while. We would think that the opportunity during session during their Ways and Means hearing would be the chance to sort of get us up to get the legislature up to speed on the transition, the success of it there, and to really take a look at maybe finishing that transition period sooner than later if all the proper information, all the experience gathered is there.
Well, and I'm sure you can easily imagine the first place I went to was, here's four trained, sworn state troopers that could be put into the patrol division. I agree with the concern that you have that that attrition would probably be the most comfortable way to do this, but I'm not sure that it would be the most expeditious way to do it. But
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, in my view on this point, attrition doesn't necessarily mean retirement. It means they've transferred to another assignment out of tribal gaming back to patrol or to fish and wildlife or to criminal. So they can cycle out of there for any number of reasons sooner than later as well. I just want to put that point on the record. And I agree with all of what's being said here. When or if we get to a point that we think that we could accelerate this and still maintain the controls, as the captain was explaining, it would be in our interest to do it as well.
I agree. I think it would be to the department's benefit, and it would also benefit the budget discussions next biennium if there was an accelerated plan brought forward to bring this into being. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. Two quick questions. Is this other fund money? Who pays? Did the tribes pay for these positions?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. Second question, the $148,000 potential savings. Maybe you said it and I missed it. What are we going to use that money for? We're going to reduce their fee. What are we going to do with that?
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, that would, in fact, reduce the overall cost to the tribes. Yes.
Just very quickly, do we bill them on a per hour? How does the billing work on this?
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, the way it works is that it's designed underneath Section 10 of the Compact. There's a formula that we do for the billing of the tribes. And basically, the way it works is that the overall amount is divided into 24 equal payments. Then that is billed out. There's some things that are added in or taken away in there as far as vendors. When we do a vendor investigation, those vendors actually pay for the entire investigation. So that amount would be deducted from that monthly bill. And then based on the amount of hours that were in the casino, that's called direct service hours, that adds to a percentage that divides how much each one of the tribes are going to pay for that month.
So I can walk away from here knowing that our tribal friends are not going to be paying for services they're not getting.
Yes.
Thank you.
Further questions or comments? I would take a motion to move the LFO recommendation.
So moved.
Have the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Senator Carter, would you consent to carry? Thank you very much. And I'll call forward the Department of Agriculture, and thank you very much. Good morning, Director Koba.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. I was not here for the previous presentation. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but hopefully this one I'll just sit right through. For the record, my name is Katie Koba, Director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and making his... Come on up, Dalton. With me is Dalton Hobbs, Assistant Director for our Ag Development and Marketing Division. We have what we think is a fairly straightforward request this morning. We're asking for an increase in our federal funds limitation in the amount of $92,807 for our Ag Development and Marketing Division program that we administer with federal funds. It's called the National Organic Certification Program. And in essence, what we get is a federal grant that comes to the state, and then when private companies go through the process to become certified as organic, they can apply to us, and we can provide a grant to them to help offset some of those costs for becoming certified. It is a cost share program. So we have additional federal funds that are coming to us this biennium. We did not have the limitation in place to receive those funds, so we're requesting that, as well as a very small amount of additional limitation for our federal state marketing improvement program. So the sum of those two is the $92,000 plus that we're asking for in additional limitation. Mr. Octave.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. This is Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services. We recommend that you approve this request and increase the agency's other funds expenditure limitation, federal funds expenditure limitation by $92,807.
Madam Chair, LFO is also recommending increasing the federal funds expenditure limitation by $92,807 for the Agricultural Development Program.
Questions or comments? I would accept a motion to move the LFO recommendation to full. Okay. Have the motion. Do I have objection to the motion?
Absolutely not.
Without objection, the motion is carried.
Thank you.
And Senator Wesley, would you consent to carry this in full?
That's your reason to do it.
Thank you very much. Call forward the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning, Mr. Acting Director. Please proceed when you're ready.
I think we're ready right now.
Go for it.
For the record, my name is Roy Elliker, the Interim Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Coming before the subcommittee, Madam Chair, for a request, I think at this point, $852,000 in additional limitation. It's for the restoration of Diamond Lake, which I've handed out a brochure that really does lay out in detail what we're up to, along with local, state, county, federal governments working to restore the lake. Of the $852,000 limitation we're asking for, about $300,000 is currently held by Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation, and about $300,000. $200,000 would be coming from Douglas County, and that means about $350,000 would be coming out of our ending balance. And those are approximate numbers as of today.
Mr. Denny.
Yes,
I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Denny. Steve Denny is one of my constituents. He's the Southwest Oregon Director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and somebody that I have had the pleasure of working with for a number of years, and is one of the main reasons why the department is so successful down in that part of the state. And he has been a colleague of mine as we've worked on the Diamond Lake Restoration Project. I think we're now in our fifth year of collaboration on this project. So thank you so much for driving all the way up here from Roseburg, and it is great to have you here.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. Members of the subcommittee, I guess I've been introduced now. So,
it's hard to follow that.
As Chair Morgan mentioned, we've been in an extensive process to resolve the issues at Diamond Lake, restoring the water quality and fisheries at Diamond Lake for the last number of years. We finally got an approved environmental impact statement under the NEPA process in December of 2004, and we've been moving on with restoring the lake ever since. I thought I'd go over real quickly what our current status is at Diamond Lake. The canal at the north end of the lake, which was used in the 1954 treatment, has been restored and is being used to draw the lake down as we speak. We're down about 5.5 feet currently. The rotenone product, which we'll use to treat the lake, has been ordered and is being processed and delivered. Contracts for the commercial fish removal, videography, and the weir reconstruction are all have been awarded, and other contracts are in the process. Security services have been agreed to by and provided by Oregon State Police, Douglas County Sheriff, and the U.S. Forest Service. As Representative Morgan or Chair Morgan mentioned, the bulk of the money is being raised by Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation. We're still continuing those types of activities to raise the dollars. Subsequent actions, we've also developed a prevention program to try to prevent this, or at least delay the reintroduction of chub into Diamond Lake. Some of the things that we've been looking at are boat cleaning stations. So we're concerned not only about tui chub, but other exotics being introduced into the lake. Use of predatory fish in case some unwanted fish do get into the lake. There's something there to eat them. An extensive education program with brochures and posters. Increased monitoring and increased public contacts through our creel surveys where we contact the majority of the fishers at the lake when they're launching boats or fishing off the bank. And then also our plans are to treat the lake this September, refill the lake over the winter time, and then restock next spring with a mixture of fingerling trout, legal trout, and then also some predatory fish, as I mentioned earlier. And then we've agreed to an environmental stocking indices that will allow us to stock more fish as the lake recovers, both in the zooplankton, the food base, and then also the water quality. So we anticipate probably getting back to a real robust fishery, hopefully by around 2009 is what we're anticipating. We'll be a little bit conservative until then to make sure the lake recovers and the water quality is maintained. With that?
With State Senator Jeff Kruse, who's requested to be able to testify on this issue, too. So in deference to your schedule needs, I would call you forward at this point, Senator Kruse.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I see the governor left. For the record, State Senator Jeff Kruse. First, I want to echo the sentiments about Steve Denny and the folks at the Roseburg office. Mr. Elliker, you have a great staff in Douglas County, and they have been an asset for me during the entire time I've been in the legislature. I started serving in 97. We started dealing with this issue then. It was amazing how quickly the lake was taken over by an invasive species. It was in less than a decade, it went from a pristine fishery to nothing. And I also want to thank Representative Morgan for her hard work on this, because she spent a lot of time on this. This isn't a Douglas County issue. This is a state issue. I remember in 97 having a conversation with a representative from Portland who's now our labor commissioner, Dan Gardner, who told me that Diamond Lake was his favorite place to fish in the entire state. And he quit going because there wasn't any fish. And it's not just a matter of fish, it's a matter of water quality, it's a matter of a whole lot of things. This has been a no-brainer for a long time. It's unfortunate that it has taken so long and so much money to get to a reasonable solution. But we are there, and all we need from you folks is the ability to spend the money, and we'll get the project done. This is probably, in my opinion, the simplest issue you're going to deal with all day long. And so I don't want to take up any more time except to thank all those who have been involved in this. It's been a long road. It's taken us 10 years. It'll be over 10 years from when we first started to when we've got our fishery back. But it's a state fishery, not a Douglas County fishery. It's very important to that part of Douglas County who we used to cut trees and we don't anymore. So we need to have some economic base there. And as the governor is fond of saying, it's all about the economy. And folks, this is all about the economy. So thank you very much, and please support the limitation. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions or comments for the senator? Representative Boone?
Can you help us on the salmon?
I've got ideas, Representative, and we will talk about that. So,
thank you very much for giving us some of your time. We will call the department and DAS back up here. Ms. Pearson, can you give us the benefit of BAM's analysis?
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the revised request. To explain a little bit why there's a difference between what you would see in the written recommendations from BAM and LFO, apparently late after we had written the recommendations, the Wildlife Heritage Foundation purchased some boats for about $98,000. And so the revised recommendation is the difference basically between the original request for $950,000 of other funds expenditure limitation. And that is because those costs for those boats for the project no longer need to be covered by the agency. So we do recommend the $852,000 other fund expenditure limitation, with the understanding that if any other such purchases should be made by the Wildlife Heritage Foundation in the future, that the Department of Fish and Wildlife would notify BAM and LFO promptly, and that BAM would and DAS would then unschedule those amounts in a similar fashion to the reduction that was done for this e-board revised request.
Thank you. Mr. Siebert.
Madam Chair, LFO is also recommending increasing the other funds expenditure limitation by $852,000, which is the revised amount needed for the project, with the understanding that ODFNW will notify DAS if additional equipment is purchased by the Heritage Foundation or any other expenditures by the Heritage Foundation reduce the need for the expenditure limitation of the department so that the Department of Administrative Services can unschedule the amount of unneeded limitation.
Thank you. Questions or comments from the committee? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. This comment's for Steve and anyone else here who may be from Douglas County. I just want you to know how fortunate you folks are to have Chair Morgan representing you. She's good. She's very good. And of the 90 members in this building, you're fortunate to have one of the top.
You're good, too.
Oh,
she's fabulous, too. If I had Tillamook County folks, I'd say this, too.
But you're very fortunate to have Chair Morgan representing you, and I hope you'll take that message back home, because you are well-served.
Representative Smith, we agree. Thank you.
A couple of things I'd like to get on the record here. This is a larger infusion of cash that's required of the department than originally was pro forma for this project. And so I'd like to have a discussion here about what this is going to do in terms of the department needing to raise the tag and license fees in the 07-09 budget cycle. So can you talk to us about what the impact of this is going to have on that situation?
Chair Morgan, members of the subcommittee, I'm assuming you're referring to the 07-09 biennium.
I'm sorry, yes.
We are publicly stating as an agency at this point with our external budget advisory groups, and then later in the month we'll be going out to a series of public meetings around the state, that the department will not be seeking any fee increases to license and tag fees for the next biennium. Now, to do that, we are going to be really on a strict savings program, because at the end of 07-09, our operating revenues, operating reserves, will be drawn down very low. And we will be coming with some kind of package, in all probability, for 09-11. But for this next biennium, at this point, we will not be seeking any license and tag fee increases, Madam Chair.
And I would like it to be reflected in the record that during the time that I've served in this body, this is the first time that this agency has gone through two budget periods without requesting a fee increase. So I think that there is definitely a salute in order here to the fiscal integrity of this agency. And I know that there has been a huge amount of hard work done on the budgeting side of the agency to make excellent use of the fiscal resources, and I really want to salute you for what you've done here. I think that this is one of the best administered agencies that I've had the experience of looking at budget-wise, and I want to make sure that the efforts that you're putting forth are acknowledged, and we thank you for that.
So what's the risk, Madam Chair? What's the risk of running our reserves down?
Well, running our reserves down below what we feel is a safe operational level means that if we started 09-11 without some kind of fee increase scheduled, frankly, we won't be able to pay our bills.
So I think that we are going to be looking at fee increases in 09-11. whether this expenditure is made or not. I think that essentially the department is going to be in a place where it's going to be time to have that discussion again with the people of the state of Oregon. Mr. Sieber.
Madam Chair, if I just might, one of the reasons the department needs to keep a operating reserve is because of the way federal repayments are done, and there's quite a lag in the time that they spend money on staff and then the federal government repays them for the money they spent. I would note that the department's working even this biennium to start saving money within their current operations. And I can't pass up the chance to talk about the nexus. You just heard just a couple items ago about vacancies in Fish and Wildlife and the legislature's direction to fill those positions so that there aren't really savings available from that side of the operations, this biennium at least, for the department to look at. And they also have the direction not to raise fees, so they're working hard to make sure that they meet all the directions of the legislature, but it puts pressure on other programs when they have to make sure that they hold or don't hold positions vacant in the Fish and Wildlife game enforcement side.
Thank you. I think another aspect to this is, too, that the fishery at Diamond Lake, when the fishery was actually in good shape, was a significant revenue source to the department. The selling of licenses up there was very robust. And we are looking forward to the time when we restore that fishery and that again becomes a positive cash flow for the department. But let's let Mr. Denny talk about that.
Yes, Chair Morgan, the economic side of it, we used to carry about over 100,000 angler days at Diamond Lake in the late 80s, generating revenue of about $3.5 million. In addition to the water quality problems, that's decreased to a low of 5,000 angler days, 95% reduction. Through an expensive stocking program, we've been able to raise that up to about 15,000. It's about as many, but with the treatment and our history in the 1950s, we expect that fishery to bounce back at some point. But it is a great revenue source to all of Southwest Oregon and as Director Elliker mentioned, to the whole state of Oregon, actually.
How did the fish get in there?
To each other. Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, we don't know 100% for sure, but we suspect that somebody probably was using them for bait or had used them as bait in the Klamath Basin where they're native and probably just emptied their live well in Diamond Lake, and that started the whole thing.
Further comments or questions? I would accept a motion to move the revised LFO recommendation to full. Have the motion. Is there discussion? Objection? Without objection, the motion is carried, and I will take this one in the full. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members.
And a call forward on the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Good morning, Mr. Weiler. Please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, good morning. My name is Tom Weiler. I'm the director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. I am appearing before you today to request approval to apply for a federal grant for funding from the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund. At an amount of $5,295,000. We're also requesting expenditure limitation for those federal funds for an amount of $5,140,800. These Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds are a critical part of what OWEB does. One of our primary functions is to operate a grant program that is operated on these federal funds as well as constitutionally dedicated lottery funds directed towards the actions to restore restore salmon populations and improve watershed health and water quality in watersheds throughout the state. These federal funds in particular are very important as a critical component of our program because they support the the local community involvement, which is such a big part of what we do. This is a grassroots effort that we're funding, voluntary, locally based grants that operate as incentives for restoration projects to occur to improve the health of watersheds throughout the state. These federal funds are critical in supporting the capacity of these local groups who do this work. They're critical in terms of being able to provide the monitoring and the technical assistance that support the on-the-ground restoration projects around the state.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, Lisa Pearson again with the Department of Administrative Services. We recommend that the subcommittee approve the authorization to apply for the grant. We also recommend that the subcommittee approve the request for an increase of federal funds expenditure limitation in the amount of $5,140,800. And then the allocation of funds, this funding source from the federal government, also included about $1 million for a fish marking trailer that would be purchased by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And so what we would recommend is that, as well, that the subcommittee recommend to the full e-board and hopefully approve an increase in the Department of Fish and Wildlife budget of $1,019,200 for the fish marking trailer. That would be federal funds as well. And then finally, just to get this on the record, we also recommend this with the understanding that this funding that we are speaking of today is not necessary for any compensation plan changes that might be necessary when the compensation plan adjustments are eventually brought forward to the e-board. And that is because the Watershed Enhancement Board has enough 2003-05 biennium carryover Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery funds available that it can use that funding in order to provide the other agencies, such as Fish and Wildlife, that do use those funds for base programs and positions to cover those costs instead of using these grant funds.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, LFOs also recommending approval of the submission of a federal grant application for $5,295,000 and increasing the federal funds expenditure limitation by $5,140,800. And this, again, as Lisa discussed, is with the understanding that OWEL will use other unused recaptured PCSRF monies to cover increased program costs for agencies that receive PCSRF monies for their programs. Additionally, as Lisa mentioned, LFO is recommending that the expenditure limitation for the Department of Fish and Wildlife be increased by $1,019,200 to accommodate the purchase of the fish mass marking trailer that was earmarked by Congress in the grant that they provided to Oregon.
Discussion. Representative Boone.
I have a question. Why does this trailer cost $1 million, and what exactly is it?
It's a real hummer.
The what?
A hummer.
A hummer. Giant hummer.
Chair Morgan, Representative Boone, I'm afraid I'm not the best person to respond to that question. It's not an area that OEB has a whole lot of knowledge over, and that's one of the reasons why we're passing these funds through to the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
This is a federal earmark. We are just responding to instructions from the federal government as to how to spend this money. And if I'm not mistaken, this is a recurring earmark. This is not the first time that this has been put in place.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's true. In fact, there is an additional about $1 million that's coming out of Oregon's share that NOAA Fisheries will be keeping to buy a fish marking trailer. So really, we're buying two fish marking trailers for over $2 million out of the $7 million that the federal government's providing us this federal fiscal year.
Additional editorial comment.
I'm sure we're all thinking the same thing.
Well, I'm thinking of some of my coastal communities and what's happening with them and what may happen to them by Friday should the Pacific Fisheries Management Council adopt the drastic measures they're talking about taking. And I'm worried about those salmon fishermen and women who have made a recent purchase of permits and boats to fish, and then having those compensation, should there be compensation, monetary compensation, be based on historical catch data, of which they have none, taken in fact that some of these recent purchases of new people deciding to go fishing for salmon now are signature fish and what people from all over the world come to expect us to have on the table rather than farm fish, which is what we're going to get. I'm just thinking some of them just sold their crabbing permits and boats and have refit from other fisheries to go salmon fishing, and now they won't be able to. So that's all I'm saying about that.
And having come through myself the spotted owl listing process and the impact that that had on rural communities that were timber dependent, I clearly understand the unease, the terror that this is causing in your communities, in your district.
People haven't even come to grips with it yet. They have no clue. People have no, making these decisions have no clue how far down this goes, right down to the little worm stand. I mean, I'm being facetious here, but I mean, every little business, every piece of our economy on the coast is touched by this. So it's going to be just devastating. And the fact that we have not enjoyed the recovery, the economic recovery that some of the rest of the state has, is equally devastating. I mean, talk about people falling into depression, and not only that, we have to look at the additional costs to the state that will come when these people go on a lot of our state service roles.
A slightly different issue, but one I think that needs to be looked at here, is we are seeing a pretty pronounced decline in the PCSRF revenue stream from the federal government. And I think it would be a good idea for this committee to kind of get a bead on the impact that this is going to have to this agency and to the granting program. Folded into that is, with the addition of line games, the Measure 66 funding stream to the agency has been increasing. And I asked the agency to do a display just so that we could have kind of a big picture look at that. And so with the committee's indulgence, I think that this will all help us give a little bit better focus to the picture that this agency will be faced in the budget discussions that will start in January.
And Madam Chair, if I might twist the conversation just a hair to say that on the bright side, in my district, Tillamook will be submitting grant application to OWEB for technical assistance for flood relief and our flood mitigation plan. So OWEB has been a huge help, and that is to do some magic with the wetland type stuff. And they have been just wonderful in terms of assisting my district, because the floods have been, you know, on top of the fishing issue, we got floods. So so appreciate everything you've done there. And hope to get the grant.
Mr. Byler, could you take us through this and talk to us about what this is?
Absolutely, Chair Morgan. What you have before you is a two bar graphs. The top item is the total revenues of the lottery funds. These are ballot measure 66, which was approved by Oregon voters in 1998 and came online in 1999. 7.5% of lottery revenues are dedicated toward these conservation restoration program investments in local communities. What's important to note on, and that is represented in the blue bluish bars on those graphs, the orange bar is the federal salmon funds that we were talking about today. Over time, over the four biennia that that OWEB has been in existence, what's important to note with the Measure 66 lottery funds is that per the Constitution, 65% of those funds, at a minimum, are dedicated to on-the-ground restoration projects, as you can see with these blue charts, blue bars, these lottery revenues are on an upward trend, and that's a very good thing for those of us like OWEB who operate primarily with these types of funds. And our capital investments, that 65%, have been very, very strong. what we've seen over the years is that our operations and our non-capital grant program in particular has been dependent upon the federal salmon funds. And those funds, again, are in the orange columns, and those were on an upward trend over time, but we're now seeing a decline as you look across the timeline of these charts. You're seeing a decline in the amount of those revenues, especially relative to the capital revenues that we have, which does create within our grant program. Our grant program is successful because of the local community involvement. It's the watershed councils, it's the soil and water conservation districts, it's the local groups who are working with landowners, private landowners, on a voluntary basis to develop grants that come to OWEB. They're the ones who are developing the partnerships, developing the work, figuring out what work is the most important to do in their area, and implementing those projects. Much of the federal funds, which we refer to as non-capital funds, are critical to support that local infrastructure that we have. And what we're approaching now is an imbalance between our capital fund program, which is robust, and our non-capital program, which is not keeping pace with those capital funds. To date, while there is a 35% share of the lottery funds available for operations or would be available for our non-capital grant program, up until this biennium, those funds have gone to other purposes, including OWEB's operations budget, but also to other state natural resource agencies to support their services.
Questions or comments? I would accept a motion to approve the LFO request. Have the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection?
I just got to say that I'll give a yes, but this is so disappointing to see $1 million for a mass marketing trailer.
Marketing.
Marketing trailer. It's no reflection on you. I'm just disappointed.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. And Representative Smith, I could give you the option of carrying this one in place.
You don't want me to carry it.
Representative Boone.
I'll carry it.
Okay, we'll give it to Representative
Complete Boone. With editorial comments. She will carry it.
Thank you very much. Call forward the Marine Board. Good morning. Please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Don Hefner, Director of the Marine Board. We come before you today with good news and a request to increase our federal funds limitation so we can use an extra $1,084,974 coming to Oregon from the U.S. Coast Guard under our existing recreational boating safety grant program. The funds are the result of final passage of the Safe, Accountable, Flexible, Efficient Transportation Equity Act, SAFETY, which passed after our budget was approved last year. This new act which was passed in July of 2005, will provide increased and stable funding over the next 5 years. The amount of federal funds increased under this act nationwide came up from $64 million to $110 million nationwide, and Oregon's share of that is about $1 million in the current budget cycle. We expect that level to remain at that higher level or increase slightly over the next several years, and so these expenditures, if approved, should be sustainable. We have a couple of proposals for new customer service improvements, including online boat records lookup and interactive forms for registration agents that will improve the timeliness and the accuracy of the information submitted to the board by these agents. Those customer service improvements cost $38,000. The board has several improvements for new and enhanced boating safety education initiatives to complement existing law enforcement and education programs. The safety initiative total $160,000. And finally, the majority of this request is $886,000 for our marine law enforcement program. And these funds will be passed through under existing contracts with county sheriffs for marine law enforcement and safety services statewide. There are no new positions associated with this request. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Ms. Pearson.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, again, Lisa Pearson with DAS, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
Thank you. Ms. Jordan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, LFO concurs.
Thank you. Questions or comments? I really like the way that you've divided up the money. I wanted to compliment the department. I think that these are places that the money will be well used. And with that, I would accept a motion to move the LFO recommendations.
So moved.
Have the motion. Is there discussion? Objection? Without objection, the motion carries. And Representative Smith, would you carry this?
I would be more than pleased to carry this one.
Very good.
Oh, my.
Call for the department, of course.
Make him carry the other one to get this one.
Yeah, that's right.
I was a little sensitive on the last one.
Good morning, Mr. Brown. Thank you for being here today.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Marvin Brown, State Forester. We're here to do two things. One is to request an allocation from the special purpose appropriation that the legislature put in place last session. The second is to describe in a little more detail our financial plan to get through next fire season and the use of that fund. In general, what we'd like to ask is that roughly two plus million dollars be transferred from the special purpose appropriation into forestry's budget. Those dollars would be used to fund the last year's use of heavy air tankers, the purchase of catastrophic fire equipment, and about $700,000+ worth of severity resources that were required to be put in place because of last year's pretty extreme fire conditions. We're going to be supplementing the $3.5 million special purpose appropriation with about $1.1 million in FEMA money that's already in the bank, reimbursed from fires in 2004. About $350,000 in FEMA money that we're expected to get sometime this fall, and another $250,000 from our federal fire program appropriation. With all of that combined and with the drawdown from the SPA, that still leaves us the ability to implement a large tanker program for next summer. It leaves us the ability to purchase catastrophic insurance for this year and next, and it leaves us about $500,000 to hold back for severity in case the season gets dry again. So that's kind of the sum of it. Our fire protection chief, Tim Keith, is here. If you got any real questions, he can answer them.
Mr. Upchair.
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services, we recommend that you approve the request for allocation of $2,018,788 from the Special Purpose Appropriation made to the Emergency Board to pay for the 2005 Emergency Fire Suppression Activities, as well as to pay for the 2006 Catastrophic Fire Insurance Premium Costs.
Mr. Jordan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, LFO agrees.
Thank you. The only question that I have here is, are federal partners making any moves in the direction of providing air tankers to us again, or is this a cost that it looks like we're going to be bearing indefinitely?
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tim Keith. I'm Assistant State Forester in charge of the Fire Protection Division for the department. Unfortunately, the movement is slow, but it is positive. The Forest Service will only have 16 air tankers this next summer, down from that historic level of 45. And that's the reason why we feel compelled to have a program, because of its importance to our initial attack efforts. They have acquired three P-3 Orions they anticipate have in service for 2007. And then on April 15th, actually of this month, they will roll out a detailed action plan for restoring those resources. And we have, through Marvin and the National Association of State Foresters, as well as one of our own staff, have been actively lobbying and pushing the federal agencies to bring those levels back up, because it's just an incredibly important portion of our program.
Well, and I think that from the perspective of Oregon's wildfire fighting strategy, the tankers have proven their worth over and over again. It is pretty much a clear-cut case of, if we don't have the tankers available to us, we're facing a lot more costlier methods of getting those fires out. And as we identified in the fire funding review process, the best way for the state of Oregon to save money is get them out while they're small. So these are hugely valuable tools in that strategy. The other thing that I was interested in was, we've had some pretty pointed discussions with our federal partners about their firefighting strategies and the stresses that that puts on the state system. Is the latest example is the Blossom Fire, and the department's contract with the BLM that caused a substantial amount of money to be spent on that fire to protect that BLM reprod that was potentially in the way of the fire. Part of the discussion there was to try to open up a discussion on relating to the master settlement that has to do with what the state's liability is financially because of decisions that are made in the federal firefighting arena. Can you just very simply and quickly update the committee on where those discussions are?
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, I'd be happy to. Through the leadership of the Forest Service regional staff, we did revisit the cost apportionment agreement on the Blossom Fire that threatened to come off onto our protection, and indeed did. We spent about $7.7 million, and we went back and in a manner consistent with the master agreement, apportioned the cost of firefighting on an acreage basis, which means that we'll end up with less than 11% of the bill instead of 7.6%, which would have been about 40% of the bill. That the actual cost accounting is still going on, but that will happen. Very confident that that's a done deal. And then associated with that, we feel it's absolutely critical to look at the firefighting on wilderness areas and in the juxtaposition of private lands adjacent to those, and provide some sort of means by which the Forest Service steps to the plate, or the BLM for that matter, and provide some financial assistance in that arena. We proposed a wildfire cost mitigation zone, which would provide for them paying the costs of fires within a short distance of wilderness areas that might come off onto private land. The leadership has agreed to that in concept. We are working to try to implement that in our fire management operations plan for this next summer. Decided not to revisit the master agreement because of some concerns, legal concerns, that the federal government have, but we believe we can accomplish the same thing, and so does my peer with the federal agencies in Portland through the operations agreement. So again, I'm confident that will move forward in a way that's very productive and appropriate for the landowners and for the citizens of Oregon.
And I think that all of us appreciate the movement in this direction, both on the department's behalf and on the Forest Service's behalf, because these are there is a real clash in the culture in those agencies, in your agency and the Forest Service, around what firefighting is all about. And so it's good to see that there is common ground coming through the discussion that's going to benefit us fiscally in the state of Oregon. The only other thing that I wanted to talk a little bit about was the insurance policy. It appears that the premium is pretty steady this year compared to last year, which I think is a great thing. And can you talk to us a little bit about what's going on in the insurance markets and kind of what we can look forward to there?
again, Chair Morgan, members of the committee, I'm pleased to, because I think that's a real success story and reflects on the success of our program. Back in January, when we directed the insurance broker for the state of Oregon to go seek insurance, he warned us that we could see a 10 to 25% increase in premium, which is what's happening in the insurance industry because of last year's hurricanes. And the reality is, and he's done a very good job of championing our cause and our effectiveness, is that he was able to procure that policy, most of which is with Lloyd's of London and the rest with domestic carriers, for the same price. And that's reflective of the fact that we do have a top flight program and we do a very careful auditing of the costs of that program. And in fact, knock on wood, if we do not have a claim this next season, the tradition has been over time that we actually may see a decrease in premium. So I'm hopeful that next year, not only will the premium be flat for 2007, could even be slightly less if we do not have a claim.
Are you at the point yet where you're looking forward to gauge the severity of the fire season?
Yes, we are. At this point in time, it would appear to be an average season, primarily because of the winter rains as well as the snowpack. But the remaining pieces that haven't been determined yet is what is the weather in May and June, and that will determine it. We really won't have a good feel for that until about the 1st of July. In June, we'll be coming back to the emergency board with our severity plan for your approval. We'll have a lot better idea at that time what the season looks like.
Any questions or comments? Representative Bruce.
Just speaking of fire, it reminds me of the fact that you should all go visit the Tillamook Interpretive Center, which is open now. Yeah, it's a wonderful recount of the story of the Tillamook fires and a great place to go. And while you're at it, come down to Tillamook, too. Marvin Brown was there at the dedication and even named the gallery of exhibits after the other Brown, Jim Brown, former director of forestry.
Thank you. Further comments?
Well, Madam Chair, I noticed the chief was actually just knocking on Formica, so maybe you could just volunteer any one of us to go up there off of our heads so we can help him.
Isn't that ironic? He's from the Department of Forestry, too.
Pictures of 100.
Oh,
you've got to love budgets. See, I got your message, Chief.
I would take a motion to move the LFO recommendation.
So
cool. I have the motion. Is there a discussion? Objection? Without objection, the motion carries. And I'll carry this one in full. And let's call for the Parks and Recreation Department. Good morning. Please proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jan Dean, the Assistant Director for Administration with the Parks and Recreation Department. House Bill 3502 transferred the operation of the State Fair to the Parks Department effective January 1st of this year. And we're here today requesting approval to adjust the expenditure limitation and position authority for the fair to operate for the remainder of the biennium. We've analyzed the fair's revenue trends over the last 6 years and project a shortfall of other funds and the need to increase lottery funds limitation for the fair by $3,527,979. And we will be asking the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule the unnecessary empty other funds limitation. We also received position authority for 12 months for the fair, so we're asking to increase the position authority to cover the last 6 months of the biennium for the full-time and seasonal positions. Finally, we're also requesting a technical correction to our budget for 5 positions that have been reclassified. This adjustment was approved during the budget hearings but was not captured in the budget report.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, again, Lisa Pearson with DAS. We recommend that the subcommittee approve the request to increase the lottery funds limitation by $3,527,979 for the state fair. In addition, we recommend that the subcommittee increase expenditure limitation by $8,573 lottery funds for the administration program and $28,467 lottery funds dollars for the operations program. This is related to that technical adjustment that
was just mentioned. And then finally, DAS would unschedule the $855,206 other funds limitation that doesn't have any revenue to support it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, LFO recommends approval of the request, and I'd like to clarify that the request includes the expenditure limitation to increase the administration program and the operations programs as well. In my initial analysis, the letter wasn't very clear that that was included in their request in addition to the $3.5 million, and they do need that additional limitation, and I am recommending approval of that as well.
Questions or comments?
Comment, Madam Chair. I'm glad to see that this department used its wisdom in getting Jan over and welcome from the other side now. And Madam Chair, with that comment in mind, I'm prepared to give you a motion.
Thank you. I think that the major issue here is that the fair lost money again in the last go round. And so we are again shoveling the hole full. I think that it is encouraging, and I'm very, very appreciative of the work that's going on inside of the Parks and Recreation Department to reform the fair. I'm very impressed with the fiscal basis that you've built under it. I think that was very well done. And aside from having to bail out that deficit situation, this is really basically a housekeeping undertaking here to realign the functions now that they've actually taken place fiscally. When we were putting this request together in the session, we didn't know how long it was going to take to actually make all this happen. And so this corrects that not knowing piece of that. And then a few technical glitches that have come to light since then, which are very normal for something that's this complex. So with that, if there are no other comments, I would just move forward that we would move the LFO recommendation with the clarification to full.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Is there objection to that motion? Without objection, then, that motion carries. And Senator Carter, would you carry this in the full committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll call forward the Department of State Lands for an extended engagement here.
Senator Carter and I moved in block 30 through 35, Madam
Ms. Hannes, please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The first item dealing with the Department of State Lands relates to the estates program. DSL manages estates of people who die without a will or without any known heirs. We act as the legal personal representative and seek to reunite the legal heirs with the estate. If no heirs are found after 10 years, then the estate benefits our school kids through the Common School Fund. Estates can range anywhere from the destitute to multi-million dollar estates, and we encounter a whole range of different types of estates when we go in. Sometimes it's fairly straightforward. Other times there are a number of things we have to deal with. Sometimes there's crime scene where we've had a house turn into a meth lab. Other times people are mentally ill, so we have to go in there and search through the items to try to find papers. We also have to go in there to secure the residence and property and the assets, inventory and search for documentation of the wills or the heirs. In doing so, dual custody is extremely important, and that ensures not only the integrity of the assets, but also the safety of our staff. And consequently, we need to have at least two people be present at the estate when papers are searched and assets are inventoried and transported. DSL's expenses are reimbursed through the estate by administrative charges that's permissible in statute, just as if you would act as a personal representative for a relative or a friend. So as a result, there is no general fund involved. Over the past 3 years, we've had extensive outreach to landlords, funeral homes, medical examiners, attorneys, judges, and others involved with estates. And this outreach, along with Senate Bill 64 that passed in the 2003 session, as well as, hate to say, the demographic trends of us baby boomers, means that I think the caseload is going to remain high. And just to contrast, in 2002, caseloads were 24 cases on an annual basis. In 2005, they jumped up to 197 cases. And to date, today, for this year, we're running at about 3 cases per week, which means by the end of this year, we'll be up to about 235 cases if that's sustained. We are asking for 2 positions, limited duration. We would plan to do then is to see if that caseload stays up high and then come back to you next year during the regular session and be able to talk about what has happened over the past year and whether or not it's warranted to continue those cases, those positions in the future. Ms. Gilbert.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, Lisa Pearson.
I do that all the time.
We recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
And I don't look a bit alike.
Lisa look more alike.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, LFO recommends you approve the request.
Thank you very much. With reference to the performance measure for this program, is the performance measure made in such a way that the addition of the staffers will be reflected in how the program performs?
Let me ask Jeanette to come up here.
Well, I just want to get, you could get back to me on that or get back to Ms. Jordan on that. I just want to make sure that when we look at this in the next session that we'll have an opportunity to gauge whether these additional positions are having the desired effect or not.
And I think we can look at that in several ways. We can look at it in the amount of the estates that are valued and how much is coming in, as well as the caseload. Right now we have estates currently active total about $3.2 million, and that's up considerably from where we were before.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. This issue is new to me, and so I just want to ask a few 101
sure.
questions. What's the minimum asset value that we are willing to manage?
We, Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we deal with estates of any size. We first have to go out there because we don't know what kind of assets there are. In some cases, the estates are destitute. In other cases, it's considerably more than that. So,
in the case of physical assets, do you store the stuff?
We store the assets for a period of time. We first try to search for the heirs. Many times we're successful in finding the heirs. And then after a period of time, we sell those assets and then deposit the money in the common school fund. And,
right,
and if
right.
we don't find them, then, yeah. But we hold auctions, for example. If we have a residence that is part of the estate, then we'll hold an auction. And most recently, we had an auction.
Where was that? Pamela
in Grants Pass. That,
this is no reflection on you, but I visualize a big Stanford and Sons where we're storing all this stuff.
Well, we store some of it in storage units, but after a period of time, we do have to auction it off.
I never knew we did this. Is this by statute?
Yeah, actually, by constitution.
By constitution.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
I never knew the state had a big.
Uh-huh.
Representative,
well, thank you. And I did know they do this, and I actually found out there were 14 Nils J. Nilsons in Oregon with outstanding accounts or whatever, and that was my grandfather's name. And the J stands for nothing, just an initial. He had to choose a middle initial when he came to this country. But my question is in 2002, just a few, basically under 100 case. What do you attribute the raise in number of cases that or estates you're having to handle?
Chair Morgan, Representative Boone, when one of the big things is when Senate Bill 64 passed that clarifies the administration of states and also specifically talks about DSL and the need to notify DSL, that then really started being talked about in a lot of the legal the CLE courses, you know, the courses that are required by attorneys and others. And so the word started getting out there significantly. And we did a lot of outreach as well. So the combination of that significantly increased the awareness throughout the state of the program.
I have to ask one more question. I'm sorry. The curiosity is just killing me.
I will, and I'll stay quiet
on
this stuff.
Too.
I can't visualize this. You go into a home and someone has a refrigerator. What do you do?
We
or a freezer. I mean,
you check it for beer.
What do you think you do with a refrigerator? What's wrong with me?
Well, first of all, we go in there and we try to look through all the papers and secure the assets. We do contract with a cleaning firm that will go in there and actually clean the house once we're
okay,
done.
Okay, so it's not our state, our hardworking state employees who are going in there and having to clean up someone's.
Not usually. And
we'll talk later.
Okay.
I don't want.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I'm just having a tough time with this.
I just wanted to say that we didn't have a choice along these lines, and that it was not rocket science, that they could have 100 one year, they could have 200 another year, they can have 5. And right. There's no way to really measure how many you're going to have it. You know, it's like saying that it's your appointed time to die and you have no real estate, you're going to have real estate left. There's no magic bullet for finding out how that happens. Excuse the pun. But how do you auction, how do you advertise your auction?
Chair Morgan, Senator Carter, we contract with an auctioneer, and then that auctioneer advertises it through his network and through his advertising.
So you don't use a newspaper or something like that?
The auctioneer will use the newspaper. And we'll also note that on our website as well.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So next time you're looking for a refrigerator. Further questions or comments? I take a motion to move the LFO recommendation to full.
I move that.
Have the motion, discussion, objection. Without objection, the motion is carried. Senator Westland, would you carry this?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, and we'll move right along here to the 05 fire suppression and land rehab costs.
Well, thank you, Chair Morgan. You just heard from the Department of Forestry on fire. We have rangelands in eastern Oregon, and last summer we had 4 fires that cost a total of $196,874. These fires were located on the Vail District in Nalyer County. We do have an interagency agreement with the Bureau of Land Management that was signed in 2002, and they fight the fires for us, but we need to reimburse them. During the last legislative session, we were instructed to come back to the emergency board should we have any fires and ask for the limitation to cover those fire costs. So this money will be used primarily to reimburse the Bureau of Land Management as well as to do some reseeding so that we can get ahead of the invasive weed problem.
Thank you. Ms. Pearson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Lisa Pearson, and we recommend the subcommittee approve the request.
Ms. Jordan.
We also recommend that the committee approve the request.
Senator Carter.
So moved.
Discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Representative Smith, would you carry this one in full? And let's move on to the Elliott State Forest HCP.
Thank you. Madam Chair, the next item is regarding the Elliott. If you recall, last year we came to you asking permission to apply and accept a grant from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. When we initially applied for that grant, it was $584,594. However, we were subsequently notified that we were only going to get $446,000, and thus the emergency board approved us to accept that grant in that amount. Subsequent to that, we learned that we could that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife was going to make good on the remaining $102,333. This money is used directly to offset expenses relating to completing the environmental impact statement and implementing agreement for the Elliott State Forest. So this will be then transferred through to the Department of Forestry, which will be working on this part.
Thank you. Ms. Pearson.
Madam Chair, Lisa Pearson. We recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, ELFO also recommends approval of the request.
The from the discussion perspective, I just want to get a couple of things on the record. It's actually the Department of Forestry that is putting together the HCP plan. The Department of State Lands is just the receiver of this funding stream from the federal government. But I think that the committee needs to be made aware that the Habitat Conservation Plan that the department is undertaking is the item of great controversy in the rural parts of the state, particularly southwestern Oregon. And there are a number of concerns that I think are very valid concerns around the direction that the department is taking with the HCP and what's going to be gained in terms of productivity from the land by having the HCP in place. I think there are issues around the NOLIS decision on the Coho that need to be reflected in it. There is a very strong potential for the Murillette listing to change status. And there, I think, needs to be a very clear business case made that going down the HCP path at any, in any way, in any form, is what the impact that's going to be on the Elliott's ability to generate revenue for the Common School Trust Fund, which it is the major funder of all state assets for that fund, and also the role that it's going to play in the economic prosperity of the local area in terms of the jobs that are created by productively working that asset. So I would just like to put it on the record that as the Department of Forestry moves through these deliberations, that there are a great many people watching this, and they have a great many misgivings around it. And I would hope that the whole issue of the adoption of the HCP receive a very good airing from the point of view of the impact that it has on both the local economy and the state's ability to fund the K-12 system.
Question.
Senator.
On your comments, Madam Chair, since they are just a conduit for the dollars, should this have been a part of the message to the is it Forest Service?
Department of Forestry.
Department of Forestry.
And had I been on top of things, I would have done it that way. But and this is not. This is also a conversation that I have also had with the department in times past. So more of an effort just to get it on the record here.
Yeah, but that, I thought we were a little glorified with them, and that should have been given to them today when they were before us. That's my only point.
Okay. Any more comments? Take a motion to move the LFO recommendation to the full.
So moved.
Have the motion. Discussion. Objection. Without objection, the motion is carried. And Representative Boone, could you carry this one in the full? Okay. Let's go ahead then and do the Natural Heritage Advisory Council grant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next one is a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service grant of $60,065. I think with the spring being here, it's appropriate to talk about butterflies. And these are for various butterfly projects from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service dealing with Section 6 Endangered Species Act funding. It will provide money. We're essentially acting as a pass-through agency again, and this would be to recipients such as the zoo and universities and the Nature Conservancy. And it would be for captive rearing, habitat restoration, census and monitoring, research, and surveys for butterflies.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, Lisa Pearson again. We recommend that the subcommittee approve an increase of federal funds expenditure limitation in the amount of $60,065.
Ms. Jordan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, LFO concurs with the DAS recommendation.
Comments or questions?
Madam Chair, so moved.
Quick. Oh, go ahead. What was your question?
So moved.
Oh, okay.
I was just going to say why are you guys the conduit? Is that a silly question?
No, it's
back
not.
To the refrigerator issue.
Oh.
Chair Morgan, Representative Boone, as I'm fond of saying, we are the slugs and bugs agency for the Section 6 ESA funding. So we are the agency to deal with grants from the federal government relating to invertebrates, which includes insects.
Everyone knows that, Debbie.
Just bugging you a little bit.
I have a motion to move the LFO recommendation. Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Senator Westland, I know...
Absolutely. In-depth knowledge of this subject. Thank you for asking that question.
Bugs and bug matter.
Yeah, that's it.
The final item for the Department of State Lands, item 35, a grant application for a conservation easement. Ms. Hans.
Thank you. This is a grant for a Coburg Ridge easement. We're asking to approval to apply for this grant. This was being done on behalf of the Nature Conservancy. The purpose of the grant is to provide funds to acquire a conservation easement on over 1,000 acres on Coburg Ridge, located north of the McKenzie River in Lane County. Coburg Ridge is one of the largest and highest quality native upland prairie habitats in the Willamette Valley, and it supports rare and sensitive plant and animal species, including one of the four largest populations of Fender's blue butterfly. And again, that's how the reason why the grant is coming through our agency. The protection of the parcel will contribute to the habitat goals of the Western. To be honest, for me to keep a straight face.
You guys better get passionate about this, and I'm insisting that I carry this one.
Really?
Now, come on.
You're going to make that a special order of business, too.
Okay, where was I? the property owners have been actively working with the Nature Conservancy on a conservation easement to cover between 1,000 and 1,084 acres. The fair market value ranges between $5.75 million to $6.3 million. The grant will pay for part of the funding, with other sources expected from BPA and private donations. Negotiations are ongoing at this point, so I don't have the final amount. According to the Nature Conservancy, the application of this easement will not affect the underlying farm forest deferral, because the land will not be taken out of production. The easement will limit development, mining, and other potential commercial uses, but won't impact agricultural use of the land. And thus, taxes to the local government will not be impacted. DSL was asked by the Nature Conservancy in early February to submit the grant, and the deadline was March 20th, and hence the reason why it being retroactive. We are also asking for an additional $12,000 to cover administrative expenses. We learned that we could do that just a couple weeks ago. We've talked with Budget and Management and LFO regarding this, and we understand they're in agreement with that. So we would ask that you approve that we could submit the grant for $412,000. If successful, the grant would be awarded late summer of 2006.
Ms. Pearson.
I'm Chair, members of the subcommittee, Lisa Pearson, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request for the retroactive authorization to apply for the grant.
Mr. Rocco.
Madam Chair, LFO also recommends approval of a retroactive submission of the federal grant in the amount of $412,000.
Discussion.
Senator Westland moves.
And request to carry, very sincerely.
I have a motion and a request. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried, and I grant Representative Senator Westland's request to carry this one, too. Thank you very much.
This is a big deal.
Department of Administrative Services. And we'll start with item 48, which is the DEQ and DHS Joint Health Lab. Director Ball, when you're ready, please proceed.
Madam Chair, more.
Sorry.
Since I say this person before us looks out of place.
Is what?
He looks out of place being with DAS as opposed to.
You saying he doesn't look good, or are you just saying he looks out of place?
That's a fancy tie.
Yeah. I don't know why I said that.
Okay, back to work.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Administrative Services. The presenter today will be Bill Foster, who is on my left. Our budget and management analyst is Kay Erickson, who is on my right. And Mr. Foster will be giving the testimony today before you, and we'll answer any questions at the conclusion of his presentation.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, my name is Bill Foster. I'm the administrator of the Facilities Division of the Department of Administrative Services. The Department of Environmental Quality and the Department of Human Services Public Health Laboratories have been located on the Portland State University campus for many years. This request is the final step of a long process to find a more suitable quarters for those laboratories. The Department of Administrative Services started working with them in the mid-90s to find some way to update or move the laboratories. After exhausting alternatives, the three agencies agreed on requesting a project in 2003. The department led a siting process to find an existing building shell and acquired it. The September 2004 Emergency Board approved partial limitation for the project with instructions to return to the Emergency Board once the design was complete and bids were received. The agencies have worked collaboratively toward the best design and best price. Based upon the bids that we have now received, an additional $8.5 million of limitation is required to complete the project. Because expenditures for costs associated with issuing certificates of participation is no longer non-limited for the department, we had initially requested $9 million to cover the project and these non-project expenses. Subsequent to submitting the letter, the department determined that sufficient limitation already existed for these costs, and only the 8.5 would be required. With this request, the department has also included requests on behalf of both DEQ and DHS for furnishings and equipment that they need to operate their laboratories. The plan is to finance this the furnishing and equipment over 6 years using certificates of participation. Each agency is requesting $600,000 of limitation plus $30,000 for issuance costs associated with the COPs. All the requests rely on existing COP authority, and any significant payments will not start until the 2007 biennium. Any questions?
Well, let's go ahead and have the BAM analysis.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Morgan and members of the subcommittee. My name is Kay Erickson for the Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management. DAS recommends that the committee approve the request with the following modification. Increase capital construction other funds by $8.5 million for the Department of Administrative Services. As Mr. Foster said, after further analysis, the agency had determined that existing limitation authority to cover the $500,000 of requested debt service already existed.
We concur with the budget management recommendation.
Questions or comments? Representative Smith.
Thank you. How many employees are going to be occupying the laboratory?
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, let me confer with the representative.
Just ballpark, yes. 150
total. Approximately 150 total.
I'm going to do a 30-second rant.
Go for it.
30-second rant has no bearing on any of you. I would ask all of us as a whole what 130 employees would do for Senator Carter's Main Street or Senator Gordley's Main Street, and at some point in time, this body is going to decide that we're going to focus our economic development efforts, which this is, in those areas of the greatest need. And I love Hillsborough. My parents live on the other side of it. They don't need any more development. What we need to be doing is focusing our efforts on those pockets where we do need good economic development, and this constitutes this, and this would do a lot for our main streets in terms of purchasing food, gas, everything else that goes with it. And at some point in time, we're going to quit putting ourselves into areas that don't need it, focus on the places that do.
Thank you.
Has no bearing on you.
Further comments or questions?
I really do think whether it's my district or not, it's not the issue, but I think once before we had worked with the Department of Economic Development when we were citing buildings and opportunities in our state, but that's where we would look. So it
should be.
And that's what we said we're doing. And again, this is not about this project
right.
at all. But it is a policy, an overall policy issue that this legislature needs to go back and take a look at when we're doing these kinds of things. So it's not, I mean, this is obviously going forward. But it is something that we as legislators should be concerned about in talking about any kind of enterprise or new development that we're taking over.
And I agree with the discussion. I think that we often find ourselves kind of at loggerheads because we also have a requirement to do things as cheaply as we can, and it sometimes just doesn't work out. So I recognize what you're saying, but there's a pragmatic side to this that has to be considered also.
Mine was just a rant. I didn't say it's rational. It's just a rant.
Is there any questions that directly relate to the health lab?
Do they have refrigerators?
They will get them.
You know, I have the ability to vote for you now, so you got to watch
That's
that.
That's right.
You better watch that. Finally got something on him.
I would accept a motion to move the LFO recommendation to the full committee.
Motion. Sorry.
So when are you moving to Deschutes County?
Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the motion is carried. And I will carry this one in full. And let's go ahead and do the fuel cost issue.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, Dave Hartwig from our State Services Division will give the presentation on the cost of gas and how it's increased.
Yes, thank you, Chair Morgan, members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Hartwig. I'm administrator of the State Services Division within the Department of Administrative Services. And I'm here to speak to you today about a request for other fund expenditure limitation of totaling $5,760,000. To cover the increasing cost for fuel. I have just a couple of comments to make. As you know, DASFleet procures gasoline and alternative fuels for use by state agencies and local governments. We also provide centralized procurement, billing, and contract management for fuel cards and bulk purchases for dispensing sites for state agencies. From July through December 2005, we had a lot of volatility in the price of fuel. We spent 46% of our limitation for this item in the first 6 months of the biennium. In fact, the time from when we prepared this letter and submitted it to you, gasoline, has again increased some 10 to 12 cents in less than a month. Our projections that we bring to you today are based on the cost pricing that we have experienced from July through December. We've increased that by 10% with the hope of mitigating the volatility that occurs in the pricing. So with your approval, our anticipation would be that our request would match our needs through the rest of the biennium, assuming we don't have wild fluctuations in the price of fuel. So, thank you.
Chair Morgan, members of the subcommittee, Kay Erickson, Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management. DAS recommends that the committee approve this request.
Legislative Fiscal Office also recommends approval.
Discussion. I think that all of us in our own personal lives are experiencing much the same thing as the state government is here. So with that, I would accept a motion to move the LFO recommendation.
Carter moves.
Discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion? The motion is carried. Senator Carter, would you consent to carry this?
I certainly will.
And let's move on to the State Data Center.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Ball. I'm the director of the Department of Administrative Services. I'll be the presenter on this topic and agenda item today. The budget report of House Bill 5166 from the 2005 session directs the Computing and Network Infrastructure Consolidation Governing Board, which is directors of the 12 agencies that will be included in the data center, to evaluate the project and bring recommended adjustments before the emergency board. And I think with that, it is best to explain a little bit of what my experience has been in the last few weeks with this project. When I came to the Department of Administrative Services, I had very little knowledge of the history and the budget history, particularly in staffing history, of the data center. And as I learned more, I became aware that the data center staffing level that had been presented to the Legislative Assembly of 2005 was staffed at 93. And during those presentations, it was not noticed by anyone that the staffing level of 93 did not include managers for the data center. That was discovered in late September, early October of 2005, at which time there hadn't been anyone on staff to turn on the lights, answer the phones, pay the bills, etc. So there was an adjustment to be made, recommended to be made within DAS to reclass some positions, reducing staff levels from 93 to 79 to accommodate the needed managerial staff within the center, as well as adjust some of the technical positions that would be assigned to the data center. My question at that time was whether or not we had conferred with legislators about this change, since it had been discussed with legislators at a level of 93. And the response was no, which was kind of a pivotal date, because the next week prior to that, towards the end of February, we were going to start hiring people, interviewing people, and appointing people to work at the data center. So until I was able to have an audience with legislators on this matter, I put the hiring, an appointment and hiring of people to the data center on hold, so we could have a discussion before the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, as well as a presentation before this committee during e-board. At the same time, what we discovered was a lot of discussion and concern raised by the chief information officers of the different agencies, as well as the newly appointed director of the data center, as to whether or not the data center would be successful with a staffing of 79 individuals. It was the general opinion across the board of all 12 agencies that there was not sufficient staffing within the data center. So I asked that a group of CIOs, along with the directors of the 12 agencies, deliver to me a staffing level that would be adequate and appropriate. That came on the heels of advice from Senator Monis Anderson and Representative John Dollum, who are the co-chairs of the GLC-IMT committee. And their general direction to me was, we want the data center to be successful, staff it with the needed personnel, but make sure that we accrue the savings that we were advised of during the session. That was how I framed it up with the governing board. Subsequent to those directions, the staff of the 12 agencies, along with the directors, came up with a staffing level of 138 positions, technical positions and management positions in the data center, with 11 security positions, which is certainly more than what was given to the Legislative Assembly of 2005. So the first task at hand was, how do we handle the extra expense? There is a slight increase in revenue needs for 2005-07. There was an increase of needs in 07-09 of $13.8 million. The agencies on the governing board all agreed that those expenses would be covered by the agencies. We would not be coming back to legislature asking for more money. We would come up with a solution to the extra funds that would be needed. And that was presented to the GLC-IMT, as well as recognition that the crude savings of the data center would be pushed out one biennium beyond where we had advised the 2005 legislative session. So in essence, we have an increase of staff at the data center, and the savings, and this is a very important point, the accrued savings of the data center are going to be pushed out one more biennium from what they had been, from what you had been advised during the 2005 legislative session. In addition to that, I think it's important to note that changes did occur within the work to be accomplished at the data center. The original business case that was made, as was presented to the 2005 session, was that the mainframe capacity of 883 million instructions per second increased to 1,185. Basically, we went from one mainframe to two mainframes. The original business case also reported an estimate of 1,245 servers, of which today there are about 1,900. So in looking at that, the workload of the data center has also increased since the time of the 2005 legislative session. With that, the Department of Administrative Services requests that the State Emergency Board take following actions: increase the department's other funds expenditures limitation by $835,547. Transfer other funds expenditure limitation of $496,079 from its Information Resource Management Division to the State Data Center. Establish 56 full-time permanent positions for its data center operations. Abolish 7 positions, 5 permanent and 2 limited, from its Information Resource Management Division, and reschedule $42,218,000 of existing other fund expenditure limitation for use by the State Data Center operations. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to respond to those now.
Strickland, these are all new positions for this center?
Chair Morgan, Representative Boone, they are new positions to the center. Most of those positions will be coming from within agencies.
Transferring?
From agencies to the data center.
Okay.
Senator Carter.
Thank you. Let it be noted that Lindsay was not at this agency during the time of the planning strategies and stuff, so my question is a generalized question. How is it that with all the checks and balances that we have DAS, well, first of all, we have all the different agencies. We have DAS, we have LFO. How in the world could any kind of planning strategy take place and everybody miss out on, all of a sudden, oops, we don't have management included in this process?
Chair Morgan, Senator Carter, it was a bit of a quandary to me, because one of the things I immediately did was I retraced the steps of how that budget was put together and brought forward. That budget was initially put together within the Department of Administrative Services in the Information Resource Management Division. It went from there to the Operations Division of the agency. From there it went to Budget and Management. From there it went to the Legislative Fiscal Office. Between the Legislative Fiscal Office and Budget and Management, it was also reviewed by the Governing Board of the Data Center, the 12 agency directors, was approved by the Governing Board, and then moved over to Legislative Fiscal Office. It went through many hands and before many eyes before it came into legislature. And that's the process that took place. Many, many checks and balances.
That's a big deal. Thank you. Senator Roseland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Ball and I have had several conversations on this subject, and as Senator Carter pointed out, I think it's fair to characterize this as a situation and condition that Director Ball inherited. I just want to say on the record, I very much appreciate your forthrightness on this issue, and I have every confidence in the stewardship of Director Ball to see this through to an appropriate and positive conclusion. So, thank you, sir.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. No reflection on you personally. My comments about to be made. This is a complete breach of... My comments are not directed at you, Director Ball, but this is a complete breach of trust between this agency and the legislature. I had numerous hours during session in which we walked through this, and over, while other members were constantly bringing input to me that they had their concerns, I kept being reassured by the Department of Administrative Services that those concerns, some of which have now come to light, were unfounded. And so, again, this is no reflection on you, but I think you have a heavy burden on your shoulders to rebuild that level of trust. And I can remember sitting in the Speaker's office with our co-chair and myself and several legislators who raised some very serious issues about the staffing requirements that weren't being going to be fulfilled from this as a result of information coming from employees who were working on this. And the upper management of DAS said, no, you need to understand those employees don't get the big picture. Well, those employees did get the big picture, and it's now coming to light. And I feel betrayed by this, not by you, but by the process and by the information that was shared with me, because I can tell you, knowing Representative Krupp, who served on my committee, and Representative Avakian, who served on my committee, the outcome would have been probably a little different than it was. So I just put that on the record.
And if I might just add, Representative Smith, I very much appreciate your comments, because I think a huge casualty in all this process is the trust between the branches of government and the trust between the public and government, because they don't see any difference between any of the branches. And the issue of trust is one that I think that we need to have a discussion around, because it really is basic to our going ahead and having an ability to keep moving this project forward and then continue to be working on other projects. And there are many of them that we are going to be collaborating on. And so with that end in sight, I asked Director Ball if it would be possible, given the new configuration that the Legislative Committee on Information and Technology had looked at and had okayed, if there was a way to lay out a timeline and essentially a work plan to have that unfold so that we could use that as a baseline as we watch the progress on this project as it moves forward. We had a clear pathway here that there was an expectation that the project would follow, and a basis to have a discussion about any deviations from. And so that is the letter that you've been given, with the back page of it being the timeline. And so, Director Ball, I would just ask you if you could very briefly take us through this so that we had an understanding of the expectation for how this was going to unfold with the revised pieces in place.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, one of the things that I discussed with the Joint Legislative Committee on Information and Management and Technology was that I did not want to slow the project down. We are currently scheduled to have all the agencies in the data center by December. that would allow us an opportunity to evaluate the efficiency and effectiveness of that data center by the next legislative session. And so that is a critical pivot point for me, because if there is anything that should come up, I want to be able to have full review and discussion with the 2007 Legislative Assembly on this matter. So I do not want to slow down. That's imperative for my goal in managing this project. What I envision here with the timetable that that was given to you is that we would report back to the Legislative Committee on Information and Management and Technology, as well as Emergency Board, as to the progress to each one of these dates identified, the beginning and ending date, and advise you of the success or lack of success, and explain why we weren't successful at each one of these events. Of course, you meet quarterly. What I'm looking at doing is sending a report to you on a monthly basis so that you will have that at your beck and call in between. And therefore, hopefully, Chair Morgan, as you mentioned, start rebuilding some trust that this project's moving forward and is being managed to the benefit of people of Oregon. That's where I'm at.
Questions or comments?
Madam Chair, I appreciate, Mr. Duvall, the timeline, but I'm just wondering that timelines are certainly there to make us a little more comfortable about what is going on, but when the kind of situation happens in terms of the numbers of employees that you plan to have, not you, but the department that this agency has, well, you because you're head of everything, has, and it hasn't been broken down in terms of management versus, you know, professional staff or other workers, that becomes the issue, those detailed things that are so important when people are giving you information, because even though right now you need more money as a result of that, and certainly you can calculate that, but you do also need timelines so you can calculate that. But how do you calculate these little unknowns that will happen? And that means that somebody has to realize the egregiousness of this trust factor that we have between us and them, and make sure that all of these little issues that are not so little in the end are taken care of. And so I'm, along with the rest, that my faith is going to certainly be in your leadership and your ability to get things done with a closer, more watchful eye.
Chair Morgan, Senator Carter, in response to that, we need to be managers of this, and we will make sure that that takes place.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. So the budget increase of $1.3 million, how's that going to affect the agencies that are going to have to pay for this? I assume it's other funds, and so it's going to be pro rata dispersed among the other agencies, or are we taking this out of general fund?
The $1.3 million, is that for 0507?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm reading the net impact of the position request is an increase by $1.3 million.
Of 0507.
Correct.
We looked into the economies of the different agencies. Now, it will come out of their existing budgets. There is not an increase in the assessment of those agencies. Those savings will have to be generated internally.
Can you assure me, follow up, can you assure me that that's coming out of their administrative budgets and not out of granting programs or dollars that are going to go to communities or to other projects?
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, I cannot guarantee you where those dollars are coming from at this time.
And I'm not trying to be honored here, but there's the potential that this $1.3 million could have been money that was going to be directly put into a community to help them, and now is going to be put into additional positions for this, potentially.
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, I would anticipate those dollars would come from their specific IT shops. Dallas, maybe you have more specific information?
I would hope so.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, of the 1.3, $500,000 is just moving existing limitation from IRMD to the data center. So we're looking at a shortfall of $800,000.
$835,000,
okay. Yep, which would we expect to come out. Originally, the money that was coming to the data center from the agencies was out of, we just transferred it within their budgets from personal services and supplies. So it was out of the operating administrative side, not the program side.
I appreciate that. I just want to make sure I'm clear that I understand that there's an opportunity cost, and a dollar spent on this is going to be a dollar taken away from something else.
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, I understand your concerns.
Thank you.
And I will ensure that those concerns are conveyed to the governing board next Monday afternoon at 3 o'clock.
Thank you.
Further comments for the director? Let's have BAM give us their recommendation.
Thank you, Chair Morgan, members of the subcommittee. Again, for the record, my name is Kay Erickson, Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management. DAS recommends that the committee approve the request, including all position actions, with the following modifications. The Department of Administrative Services will abolish 5 permanent positions and 2 limited duration positions from the Information Resources Management Division and abolish 72 limited duration positions from the State Data Center. The net result of this recommendation, and of course with the committee's approval, is that the State Data Center will have a total of 149 permanent full-time positions, which is 75.54 full-time equivalent for the 2005-07 biennium.
Dallas?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Legislative Fiscal Office concurs with the budget and management recommendation. I'd like to point out that the reason for eliminating that the Department of Administrative Services will eliminate so many limited duration positions is that these new positions that are being requested now, permanent positions, will be doing a lot of the transition activities that were originally budgeted for limited duration positions. Many of these positions will phase out in the upcoming biennium, but so that's what we wanted to point that out.
Committee, I'm wondering if it would be prudent to add a section to the recommendation asking that we do get a report on a regular basis from DAS as to the unfolding of the program against this new timeline so that we have a way to gauge whether this is staying on the track, this new track that's been established.
Madam Chair, what I'd like to see happen is, since Mr. Ball has said that he will be giving us a monthly accounting, I'd like to reflect the positive side of this, since he offered to send that this committee is expecting, per the head of department, DHS, monthly reports on this. Since he volunteered that information to us, rather than it seemed like it's a sanction against him for giving us the data, or something to the effect that we're counting on Mr. Ball's monthly reports that he can, you know how to word it.
With the understanding,
yeah.
If I may, Madam
yes,
Chair, it'll say something like, with the understanding that the department will provide monthly reports on the stat progress. In between the time when it comes, it has to come back to the emergency board.
The committee on government.
JLIMT?
It would be to both the JLCIMT and to the emergency board members.
I would accept a motion to move the LFO recommendation with that amendment. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion carries, and I'll carry this one in full. And let's do our last item, which is the Information Resources Management Division.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, Mike Zanin, our interim CIO, will give the presentation on the next agenda item.
Good morning.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Mike Zanin. I'm the interim chief information officer with the Department of Administrative Services, and I also serve as the administrator for the Information Resources Management Division. And I'm here this morning to request an other fund expenditure limitation increase of $6,625,469. The reason for this request is funds to enable IRMD to continue to provide services that have been requested by our customers. And in every case, we do have the revenue to support the expected expenditures that we need this increase for. What I'd like to do briefly is go over how we get to that $6.6 million, talk about the specifics within each program area, and then answer any questions that you might have. Number one, our publishing and distribution section within the IRM division provides postal services and bulk rate postage for state agencies. As of the first of this year, the U.S. Postal Service increased their rates. That was unanticipated when we put that budget together, and we need to pass that increase on to the customers that procure those services from us, and that amounts to $762,771. Next, our Technology Support Center is our internal help desk that provides local support for desktop computers and the networks that they're attached to. And we also provide services to the governor's office and to a variety of client agencies who do business buying that desktop support services from us. We need to replace some servers that were unanticipated. We have that covered within our existing revenue. We don't have the limitation to cover that replacement of those servers, and we're requesting $280,666 for that. Next is our project management office. This is a group that is a fee-for-service organization that provides professional project management to within the Department of Administrative Services and to other departments. And we were requested early on in the biennium to provide project management services above and beyond what we had anticipated when we put the budget together, specifically to provide some project management expertise for our enterprise security office. And we're requesting a $305,005 limitation increase for that program. Next is our electronic government program. In working with the agencies, we had determined that there are several state agencies that are interested in procuring what are called electronic forms. This is the ability to fill out forms online and basically have that information populate a database as opposed to having to re-enter that information. We got together with those agencies and worked out with our vendor that we currently have servicing some of our, providing some of our e-government services to provide a means to offer these services at a greatly reduced rate. If the agencies were to go out and try to procure those services by themselves. And so we're anticipating, based on our interview of the agencies and what they're saying they're going to buy once we get this contract in place, that we need an additional $2 million in limitation increase. And that's basically pass-through money. DAS holds the contract. And so agencies will procure those services through us and pay us, and we will pay the contractor. And that's, we're anticipating about $2 million additional dollars needed for this biennium. Then we have two programs where we are requesting expenditure limitation increase for carryover funds from the 03-05 biennium. Our business continuity planning program had $57,000 and $57,013 from the 03-05 biennium that we want to carry over. And then the geographic information systems function within our division. Received funds to procure floodplain mapping and purchase aerial imagery throughout the state. They got this money from other governmental agencies, and we're requesting $461,999 carryover from the 03-05 biennium. And then finally, there are two just budget corrections that apply to the whole division. We're requesting $1,557,993. For the IRM division, our budget was rebuilt in between the last year about this time, between the governor's recommended budget and between the legislatively authorized budget. And in that rebuild, there were a portion of employees' salary called pension obligation bonds that were omitted from that calculation. And we need to adjust that. We've got the revenue, but we need to adjust it by the $1.5 million. To cover the pension obligation bonds. And finally, we're requesting $1,200,222 for the payments. We originally were going to, when the Department of Administrative Services And within the IRM division, when we provide services for one another, we had intended to be able to do a revenue transfer so we didn't have a double counting of the funds. And that's the way we set up our budget when we put this together. And in talking with our accounting services folks and trying to actually do that this biennium and to making sure that we're clean from an audit standpoint, we are going to have to actually count those not as revenue transfers between the various sections within our division, but we're going to have to count those as expenditures. And so to make sure that we're doing things right, because we're counting them as expenditures, it doesn't change the actual amount that we're spending, but we actually have to count those as expenditures. We're requesting the $1.2 million for a total of $6.6 million and some change. And with that, I'd answer any questions that you might have.
Sir, so why don't you go ahead and give us your recommendation?
Thank you, Chair Morgan, and members of the committee. Again, Kate Erickson for the Department of Administrative Services Budget and Management Division. DAS recommends that the committee approve the request with the following modification. DAS will unschedule the $2 million other funds pending an established need for the e-form services from the e-government program.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Legislative Fiscal Office also recommends approval of the request with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule that same $2 million until the need of the business case.
Okay, questions or comments from the committee? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. On the pension obligation bonds, you mentioned that somehow they inadvertently got admitted. That kind of went by me too quick.
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, I'll give you my best shot at this. Pension obligation bonds were added to each calculation per state FTE when the PERS there was a deficit that had to be accounted for, and
so these are employees that weren't included in that calculation, and now we're making up for that. I understand the PERS part of it.
Representative Smith, the issue is when the budget was rebuilt midstream, that portion of each employee's salary was not factored in, was not calculated.
As a state as a whole or just in the department?
Just within the Information Resource Management Division.
Got it. Thank you. That's all I needed. Thank you.
Further questions or comments? I would take a motion to move the LFO recommendation to full.
So moved.
Have the motion. Is there discussion? Objection? Without objection, this motion carries. And Representative Smith has agreed to carry this one in the full. And with that, we have no further business before this committee, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Good job.